What I want to say right off the bat is that we need to wake people up, and I'm really hoping that you and your audience can help with this. People like Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, they need to wake up. Like, I think they know that there are, that the government's hiding things, that they do conspiracies, but they don't realize that the same stuff that's happening in like medicine is also happening in physics. Is that they're actually hiding underlying physics from us and not, and just hiding it kind of in the open where we just don't
realize. I was about to say, how do you feel the president and his science czar saying everything you said?
It's crazy. Well, listening to that and then people trying to like downplay it. Trump keeps repeating it over and over. We have weapons that nobody understands. I mean, and if you look at those videos, you go, do you think they're going to tell somebody like Elon about that? No way in hell. He doesn't have a need to know about this kind of weaponry, this kind of technology. In fact, I'm not even sure the president needs to know, but I know that Trump has been made aware because of the way he's talking about it. And he's even talking about China potentially catching up in a few years, which should be alarming for people. And so these guys know about it. They've been briefed about
it. So when Trump says we control time and space, as Sinusar does, not Tic Tacs, how are they projecting it? Do we know?
Yeah, so the toroidal plasma is a shape, basically. It's a donut shape of plasma. It turns out plasma produces its own electromagnetic fields. So given this understanding, with a dense enough plasma, the electromagnetic fields can be self-stabilizing, self-containing. So you can almost imagine like these balls of plasma could really just be spun up almost the same way where you flick on a lighter. And I think that's what's scary about it. I think that's part of the reason why they don't disclose it, is that unlike all the sophistication associated with producing a nuclear bomb, producing these balls of plasma that can do this might be relatively easy. Inside of that, it's probably like a hypersonic drone. What they did was they took the same spy plane concept where we used to use a plasma sheath in front of our spy planes to reduce the drag, and they turned the plasma sheath into a drone. They turned the turbine engine into a heat exchange. And now you basically just have a tube flying around, a magnetic tube flying around with plasma around it. It's something called magnetohydrodynamics. This is the concept of fluid plasma. But it's an air breathing system, which means that it essentially doesn't need onboard fuel. It can get what it needs from the air, from the environment. This concept of these air breathing magnetohydrodynamics and these plasmas, it goes back several decades. It goes back to, I think, the fusion bomb. Edward Teller, the father of the fusion bomb. I found a paper from 1992 where he's talking about, the name of the paper is called Space Propulsion by Fusion in a Magnetic Dipole. So essentially what they figured out, in my opinion, was in the 60s, we figured out the fusion bomb, and then we never saw the fusion bomb ever again in the 60s.
And explain the fusion bomb. We all hear about hydrogen bombs, atomic bombs. Some know about neutron bombs. What is a fusion bomb?
Yeah, so a thermonuclear weapon is a two-stage device. It is an A-bomb, a nuke, as we would imagine, a big mushroom cloud, that ignites a fusion, secondary payload. And and you should actually talk to Dark Journalist. I think you've had him on your show many times. He's, I believe, 100% correct about like the history of this science, is they were trying to produce a fusion bomb without the A-bomb component to it. So just the fusion aspect of it. And people should wonder, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? The idea behind it is that you're producing a detonation that doesn't have heat, doesn't have neutrons. Most of the reaction that produces heat and deadly radiation comes in the form of neutrons. And they were trying to minimize the neutrons, trying to produce a clean hydrogen bomb. I propose that a clean hydrogen bomb might literally just manipulate time and space. And so if they discovered that, like during Castle Bravo, when they were, or the Ripple projects, when the nukes, they probably just decided this is too dangerous. This is too powerful to be allowed to be known to be public. And I can imagine people in a smoky room decided that, okay, we have to hide everything about this. Because how is this even possible? Like with Castle Bravo, they were trying to detonate, they expected a 6 megaton bomb explosion, detonation, and they got 15, 2.5 times what they were expecting. And what they realized was there must be another source of energy. Where's all that energy coming from? They realized it's coming from the zero point energy. They realized trapped resonance can produce an explosion, a detonation, significantly more powerful than anything prior. And so when they started tweaking these fusion bombs, they started producing them that were a million times more powerful than the original A-bombs.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
It's Tuesday, September 9th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a big show for you today. We're going to open up the lines for your calls. We're going to talk about vaccines. We're going to talk about Israel. We're going to talk about Nepal blowing up out of nowhere. Scenes of complete insanity in that Himalayan country as the Gen Z protests is what they're calling it. And it's burning the parliament building, and they're chasing the finance minister through the street. Very exciting stuff. We'll look at what is exactly behind that. Of course, we've got Israel gearing up for a full-fledged invasion of Gaza City. We've got vaccine news, tons of vaccine news to get into. A lot of health news in general, I should say, with RFK Jr. making some pretty big moves with HHS. I got, again, more videos than is responsible, quite frankly. And we'll get into all of it. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 9th of September, 2025. Nepal's Prime Minister Ali quits after violent protests over social media ban. Nepal's government lifted its ban on social media platforms Tuesday, a day after police opened fire on a mass street protest against the ban, killing 19 people. And we have a lot of videos of this that we can play as B-roll. 25, 24, 26, 27. These are buildings burning in Nepal. The finance minister being chased through the street. Nepal's army is now evacuating the government ministry building. I mean, it's popping off in Nepal. And this is all over a social media ban, and they're calling it the Gen Z protests. Protests in Nepal have revealed the extent of young people's frustration with the lack of opportunity in the Himalayan nation, and they spiraled into broader challenge to the government. While around a fifth of young people are unemployed, many note that the children of the political elite seem to enjoy luxury lifestyles and numerous advantages. Nepal's prime minister resigned Tuesday as protests against a short-lived ban on social media grew increasingly violent and expanded into broader criticism of his government and accusations of corruption among the Himalayan country's political elite. Hey, say what you want. They know how to express their anger. Say what you want, but this government's not getting away with what the UK government's getting away with. And they've actually had to reverse their social media ban. Unlike in Britain, where the so-called, social media, digital ID, however they're justifying it, to stop children from looking at suicide sites. And then they've just, ban all of the factual reporting about the immigration crisis. And the English are hanging flags, which is nice, but I haven't yet seen any videos of the ministers of the UK government being chased by mobs down the street. But hey, a man can dream. Go to clip number 25 here. This is actually the finance minister being chased by a mob through a street, through the streets of Nepal. Let's watch. So there you see, that's the finance minister running there, the giant mob running after him. He gets kicked, slammed into a wall, and continues to flee for his life. It's getting pretty crazy. Again, there's a lot to say about this. We'll revisit it here and talk about sort of what it means, what it portends. Meanwhile, Israel to demolish Palestinian homes in wake of Jerusalem shooting. Israel ordered on Tuesday the demolition of homes in the West Bank hometowns of two Palestinian gunmen who attacked a bus stop in Jerusalem and will revoke the work permits for hundreds of their fellow villagers and relatives. That's what that's called, a collective punishment. It's called collective punishment, folks. And it's, well, it ain't Christian. Israel said the gunmen are from the towns of Katana and Kabeba, north of Jerusalem in the Israel-occupied West Bank. They opened fire at a bus stop in the outskirts of Jerusalem on Monday, killing six people. In a statement, Defense Minister Israel Katz said he ordered sanctions to be imposed on the attackers' family members and the residents of the two villages. Every structure that had been built without permits in the two towns would be demolished, and 750 people would have their permission revoked to work in Israel, the main source of income for many Palestinian families. Now, there's a lot of suspicious stuff about this shooting in the first place. And at this point, I mean, we should be keeping track of it. It's the type of thing you don't know you're supposed to keep track of. You think it happens once and you think, what a crazy coincidence. What an obvious scam. Let's talk about this, but you never think to like note it down because you never think it's going to happen again. And then it happens again. And you're like, wow, what the heck? And then it happens again. And you're like, I should have been keeping track of this. The pattern I'm talking about is the pattern of Benjamin Netanyahu being on trial for corruption, and then immediately some natural or not natural at rather, but a military disaster taking place, preventing him from being tried. I mean, it is cartoonish at this point. It's like Syria falls right when it's happening. Oh, the Iran attack happens right when he's, you know, supposed to be at trial. He was supposed to testify at a trial yesterday. And oh my gosh, there's a shooting attack. I guess I can't testify at this trial anymore. I mean, it's to the point where it's, I mean, it would be comical if it wasn't, you know, false flag attacks to justify the incorporation of the West Bank into Israel proper through the forced dislocation of the people there. But again, I guess, you know, again, I'm just asking for the middle ground. I'm begging for there to be a middle ground of some sort. Okay, because I feel like we've got, and it's weird because Israel and America, if you talk to people in power, they think they're the same thing. They actually don't know that these are two different countries. They're under the impression that Israel is America, America is Israel. We believe all the same things. We have the same character and morals and everything. They really think that we're the same. We're not, though, and I think the evidence can be seen in what happens when you have a, I don't know, brutal murder on public transportation, okay? In the Israel paradigm, you kill their entire families and demolish their houses and ban their relatives from working ever again. And you basically, you know, kill everybody they know and incorporate their homeland and annex it into your territory. In America, very similar event, random death on public transportation. The response is to call anybody who talks about it racist, to cover it up, to downplay it, to distract into mental health and, gee, but is this really the type of thing that we want to be basing our laws on just because you're scared of a video? You really want to change the laws? So it's like, is there a middle ground? Can there be a middle ground? Because I'm not in favor of, like, if we were to take the Israeli tactic here, DeCarlos Brown, who stabbed Irina Jaruzka on the bus or on the train in North Carolina, we would like burn whatever neighborhood he's from to the ground and kill everybody in it. I'm not in favor of that. I think that's horrible and crazy, but it actually makes more sense than what we're doing right now, which is to pat the man on the head and apologize for, you know, building a society that he couldn't handle. And it's like, can there be a middle ground? Can we just punish severely the people that commit violence against innocents? Can we just, to the individual who does this, severely reprimand them as an example to anybody else who wants to do this, that you will not get away with hurting one of ours? And can we stop Israel from faking or allowing violence to take place to justify their outrageous genocide and land grab? Is there a middle ground? Can we achieve it? I hope. I'm just a wild-eyed dreamer like that. Meanwhile, Republican senators launch investigation into Palisades fire. Two Republican senators have launched a congressional investigation into the Los Angeles Palisades fire, looking at what they're calling failures surrounding the preparation for and response to the disaster. The January 7th wildfire destroyed more than 6,800 structures and killed 12 people. Senators Ron Johnson of Wisconsin and Rick Scott of Florida say the investigation is to uncover and expose the truth, as families and community in the community deserve answers and accountability. California Governor Greg Newsom welcomed the investigation. Oh, well, good. Oh, well, wonderful. Well, great. Well, we'll look very much into that then. And we'll see if you welcome the conclusions that we come to. Meanwhile, Kremlin's top negotiator declares Putin and Trump, quote, will prevent World War III. The Russians are either incredibly optimistic with bilateral ties, that bilateral ties with the U.S. can improve, or else they're just stroking Trump's ego with the same end goal in mind. At a moment, the U.S. European leaders are consulting on potential 19th round of major energy and banking sector sanctions against Russia. Kirill Dmitriev, top Kremlin negotiator and senior aide on international economic affairs, touted that President Putin and Trump are closer to ending the conflict in Ukraine. He went on to say, their efforts could prevent or avert a potential World War III, he wrote on X over the weekend, to the surprise of many that Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill won World War II, Putin and Trump will prevent World War III. The Post featured a photo of the 1945 Yalta conference where the leaders of the U.S., Soviet Union, and the U.K. met to shape the post-World War II order following the defeat of Nazi Germany. Oh, and what a success they've had. Wow, it's that post-World War II order we're all just luxuriating in, that post-World War II order that made everything pleasant and nice and nothing went wrong from then on. Yeah, hopefully we can do a little bit better this time. Hopefully by avoiding World War III, we cannot set up a banker's paradise where endless wars are fought for no particular purpose to the detriment of everybody involved, and with the end result being 80 years on, the European people slated for total eradication. Hopefully we can do a little bit better this time, guys. Let's try to learn from our past mistakes. Can we do that? Thanks. Thank you so much. Australia orders tech giants to enforce age verification ID by December 10th. Australia is preparing to enforce one of the most invasive online measures in its history under the guise of child safety. With the introduction of mandatory age verification across social media platforms, privacy advocates are warning that the policy set to begin December 10th, 2025, risks eroding fundamental digital rights for every user, not just those under 16. E-Safety Commissioner Julie Inman Grant told tech giants like Google, Meta, TikTok, and Snap that they must be ready to detect and shut down accounts held by Australians under the age threshold. Or probably, you know, who speak out against the government. But whatever. They just want to make sure they have the mechanism to shut down accounts entirely and prevent certain individuals from getting on the internet. You know, because they're underage or whatever. So once again, we see that worldwide this push for digital ID and restricting access to the internet to demand government approval before you sign on. This is being deployed worldwide. It's being incorporated into every Western country. And spoiler alert, it has absolutely nothing to do with anything they say it has to do with. It's not about pornography. It's not about suicide. It's not about social media and the negative influence of social media on children. If that was the case, there's like 10 million things that they could do other than demand every single citizen provide a biometric ID to log online. They could do literally anything to slow the proliferation of, you know, commonplace mainstream pornography. I mean, why don't you just shut down OnlyFans? Why don't you just shut down the pornographic websites for hosting child pornography in almost every single case and for just breaking the law in like a million different ways? It's just constant with these companies. I mean, we've heard the stories before. Some 13-year-old gets raped. The video goes up on Pornhub, and it takes them like 3 years to even get a response, let alone get it taken down. And in some cases, it's not even taken down, and the pornography websites are literally making money off child pornography of a rape for years on end. Like, oh, but you have to turn over your ID. But we're going to have to scan your iris to stop this stuff from getting to kids. Literally 10 million things they could be doing other than this. They're doing this because they want the digital ID, not because it's going to help in any possible way. I really hope we all recognize that, but of course nobody does. That's your Daily Dispatch brought to you by TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you go to take advantage of our incredible sales. We have a new one. It's the free $10 Ultimate Fundraiser Sale. You're getting free $10 credit with every purchase over $75 in this critical fundraiser sale for a limited time only. Stock up on premium supplements and patriotic apparel today. Empower your health and show your pride while saving big. Limited time offer. Shop now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let him know who sent you. Now, I got a lot of videos to go to. I'm wondering where to even begin. Obviously, crime continues to be sort of the top story today. And we'll get very much into that. But I think we'll start with clip number 9 here. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is Brian Stelter talking about the murder on the train in Charlotte, North Carolina, where a Ukrainian refugee, young woman, just getting off a shift at a pizza place, stabbed in the neck by a black guy for no discernible reason. Although we didn't know this at the end of the show yesterday, but it was a captive dreamer I saw first saw it, and I'll go ahead and pull the video in so we can show it to you. But the security footage of the stabbing, you can actually hear the guy after he stabs the woman muttering to himself, "I got that white girl. I got that white girl." So, you know, that's what we call, you know, that's sort of the brainless thug version of a manifesto, right? That's his manifesto. It's, "I got that white girl. I got that white girl." In case there was any speculation as to whether this was mental illness or, you know, just a random attack. That had nothing to do with race. No, it had everything to do with race. This was anti-white violence, just like Austin Metcalf, just like 15 other stories I will tell you about today. But here's Brian Stelter telling you that it's wrong to talk about this. It's wrong to come to any conclusions about this. And, you know, frankly, you're racist for caring. Let's watch.
Really, over the weekend, Elon Musk, Charlie Kirk, other Trump-aligned figures succeeded in making this senseless death a symbol of big city crime. We heard President Trump asked about it yesterday when he was heading home from New York City. He didn't seem to know much about it. He said he would get briefed. And then today, Trump did know all about it. That's exactly what has happened here. This story has trickled up from local news to social media and now to the president's attention. And it's being used, as you said, Brianna, as a political symbol, with MAGA media calling for more forceful punishments and more incarceration. I have to say, some of the replies to Musk, some of the comments around this story are baldly racist, stoking fear of African Americans because this man attacked a white woman. The open racism on sites like X today, it's eye-popping. But there are also legitimate questions about this so-called career criminal, someone who had been a repeat offender. And those questions, I hope they're not lost amid all of the cesspool kind of comments on social media.
This is a political thing because what happened is the direct consequence of the political choices that were forced on the American people by the radical left following the death of George Floyd. I didn't see Brian Stelter complaining about that. I didn't see Brian Stelter complaining that, well, this was just some death that was on social media and then it worked its way up through the mainstream news to, you know, get to the political office. I mean, the exact same process that happened here, because that's what happens, because you have a local news story that's reflective or an indication of a wider trend societally that people latch onto and care about and use as an example. It has become a symbol, but it's real. It's not, this wasn't something that was politicized. This was an attack that was political. I feel like we have to go through this every time there's a mass shooting too. Because of the claim that things are being politicized. And it's like, you did bail reform. You did defund the police. You did hiring these DAs that, you know, think that justice means letting the criminals out over and over again until they finally kill somebody. And then once and for all, putting them away. But only after that. But only after they, you know, escalate up to cold-blooded, ruthless, random public daylight murder, only then do you, you know, take the threat they pose seriously. And so this is a direct consequence of that, as well as the continual, relentless, ubiquitous anti-white rhetoric that is constantly spewed from these mainstream media outlets that completely deny black people the, like, willpower and, like, sovereignty or anything. It's just, you know, black people are not, they're not capable of making their own decisions. They're not responsible for the outcome of their choices. They're just victims of society, and everything bad they do is actually reflective of how white people treated them badly 400 years ago. So all of this is a direct consequence of that. It's not being made political. It is directly political. And the reason it's not being covered nationwide, or wasn't being covered nationwide by mainstream leftist outlets, is because it's political, because they are willing to allow crime to take place and are willing to allow murderers to get away with it and be freed, or just the overall trajectory of crime to continue to increase, rather than admit that their policies have brought this about. So they're willing to cover up these crimes and allow the crimes to happen in order to get your vote, or to, you know, trick you into thinking that what's going on isn't actually going on. We're actually going to cover it. We're actually going to talk about it. We're actually going to expose clearly the anti-white animus that, you know, lies at the heart of all of this, and that they've been pushing for. So again, yes, we actually want changes to the law. We actually want there to be severe consequences for repeat criminals. We actually want people who are charged and convicted of crime to stay behind bars and be kept away from our family members and our children. Is this hard to understand? I mean, at this point, I want Brian Stelter in prison. I mean, it's like, we gotta do something. And again, we're gonna look at a lot of this stuff today. And part of me does kind of feel like I hate how we are constantly in this cycle of, like, something happens, everybody focuses on it. It's the only thing that anybody posts. It's just like takes over Twitter. Everybody's hyper focused on it. And then like a month later, we just forget it. And because something else horrible happens and we move on to that. In a way, I feel like I'm like, here we go again. Okay, there's this brutal stabbing. We're going to complain about it. We're going to call it out. Nothing's going to change. We're going to move, you know, they're going to bomb Iran next week. That's going to be the big topic of conversation. We're going to completely forget about this and then just bring it up as a reference the next time it happens, just like we're bringing up Austin Metcalf in response to what's happened on the train in North Carolina. And so it's like, okay, I guess that means something has to change. I guess that means that, like, we can't keep just talking about this. We can't just keep going through this Groundhog Day cycle of the same thing over and over and over, where you have white people viciously attacked or murdered randomly, having done nothing, by a black person who is making statements like, I'm going to kill all the white people, I got that white girl. And then we're not just going to move on after that. Like, we have to, like, make changes in laws. We have to, like, get rid of the DAs. Or we have to take a page out of Nepal's book and, like, burn these places down. Like, I don't know. We got to do something. I don't like being stuck in this loop. I don't like being continually, you know, at odds with my fellow Americans. So we need to do something drastic, and it has to come from the government, or else it's going to be a lot more violent, a lot crazier coming from the people. So join us, leftists. Let's fix this problem.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr., He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. The first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle. You gave me, it's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshow.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle. And so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I got to get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimate Methylene Blue, thealexjonesshow.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I think it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to a physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it if you're on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychotic. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. So we just saw Brian Stelter demonizing MAGA for caring that a Ukrainian refugee young woman was brutally murdered on camera, cold blood. By a black guy muttering under his breath, I got that white girl, I got that white girl. And as John Doyle notes, I thought this was good, at Comrade Doyle, you can literally be a woman, a Ukrainian, and a refugee, but because you're white too, they'll ultimately go out of their way to avoid discussing the details of your murder accurately, if at all. This in response to Axios saying, Grizzly Charlotte stabbing video fuels MAGA's crime message. Do you understand nothing that the liberals, leftists, communists, nothing they believe supersedes their anti-white agenda? I mean, this woman could have been, you know, a trans-disabled Ukrainian female refugee, and they still wouldn't give a damn that she was murdered because
acknowledging that would mean reflecting on the policies that they've passed over the last few years and their abysmal failure. And there really is something about leftists and about Democrats. I mean, they are allergic to reality in a very real way. I was just reading the story, Republican senators launch investigation into Palisades fire. And they're, you know, the local government in California is acting like they did nothing wrong. It's truly baffling. They're like, we did exactly what we could do with what we had, Crowley said in a January 10th interview. Something that's significant with this particular fire, I would say we threw exactly what we could with what we had. They're basically like, we did a great job. The facts are undeniable. California mounted one of the most aggressive wildfire responses in American history, deploying 16,000 plus first responders and over 2,000 firefighting assets faster and at a greater scale than ever before, he said. Okay, but the neighborhood burned to the ground. What are you talking about? I'm telling you, there's something just crazy about these people. That there's like, yeah, we did a great job. You should have seen the response that we did. 16,000 first responders, 2,000 firefighters. Yeah, we nailed it. And it's like, you failed utterly. The neighborhood doesn't exist anymore. How are you patting yourselves on the back right now? It is truly crazy. Truly insane. 1,000 firefighters could have been on duty the morning of the fires broke out, but were instead sent home on Chief Crowley's watch, Bass said in February. 1,000 firefighters on the morning the fire broke out could have been deployed to fight it. They just sent them home. And then you go, well, we're going to investigate that. And they go, all right, fine. We did everything we possibly could have. We did a great job, actually. Really? Because everybody's dead. So what do you mean you did a great job? How much worse could you have possibly done? How much worse could it have possibly been? Truly. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. Like, there's just something about Democrats. They are just evil. They're just evil. Like, I'm sorry. You think the Democrats are like about the union. they're about unions and about, you know, equal opportunity. No, they're about barbarism and senseless stupidity, just endless retardation. That's what they're about. That's all that they're about. Everything else they talk about, it all comes secondary to this like envious drive to tear down white people and destroy everything beautiful. Out of just impotence, I don't know, or out of petulance. That's sort of the unifying coalition. That's the unifying thing that they're all about. So they'll defund your police. They'll put a DA that lets criminals out. That criminal can murder an innocent young woman, and the Democrats will completely ignore it and call you the bad guy for pointing it out. Pointing out the negative consequences of their policy they see as a racist attack against them. You cannot have a country with people like this. It's not possible. So again, is there any part of the Brian Stelters out there that are willing to grant the average Trump supporter, right winger, whatever, the random person talking about the stabbing on the North Carolina train? Are they willing to grant them that they might genuinely be concerned that they're going to get stabbed on the train? Could that possibly be the driving force, or are they just racist and this is just a chance to be racist? Like, that is their mindset, is that there are people out there, thousands of people on X, and they don't care about public safety. I mean, why would they care about being stabbed randomly or assaulted by a mob? Or having a, you know, brick crack your skull and the person get away because there's no police around to stop them. I mean, can they empathize even a little bit with the idea that we don't want ourselves or our daughters or our wives to bleed out on a train because they've just been stabbed by a 14-time criminal that's been released yet again to victimize more people? Could it be, is it possible? Like, I really wonder, is it possible for them that this is something that we just genuinely care about and want to see fixed? And that it doesn't matter who the person is, we don't want people to be stabbed on the train, and we should do something to prevent that. Because according to Brian Stelter, the only reason we care about this is because racism. Again, everything they say is just a pure, unadulterated projection from their own minds onto us. Because everything they say about, you know, this attack on the train does not apply to the attack on the train, does not apply to how the right wing is covering the attack on the train. It does apply to George Floyd and Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin and any of the other rogues gallery of criminals that have, met their fate at the hand of police over the last decade or so. They don't actually care about any of that. And if they did, then they would do something about the insane amounts of crime in the black community that kill the vast majority of black people. They don't actually care about that. They care about using it as a weapon against their racial enemies. So that's what they, that's why they care about it. And it was not these attacks that Black Lives Matter is based on were not indicative of a wider trend in the way that this stabbing was, in the way that the stabbing that was caught on video is just one glaring example of a constant and daily event, if you care to look for it, of white, innocent white people being savagely killed or beaten by black people who have been, you know, inculcated, indoctrinated into the racial hatred that's pushed from the mainstream media and the politicians and from the likes of Brian Stelter himself. So just everything they say about this event does not apply to the event. It does apply directly to the way they act, the way they perceive the world, the way they will weaponize an event, politicize it, make demands, and achieve things. So, like, do we just need a riot? Is that what it is? Is it because we're not rioting, they're not listening to us? Is it because we're not burning down bookstores and beating up and then, you know, throwing frozen water bottles at police? Is that why we can't ever get anything done? And of course, this is the beauty of the system they've set up. If we don't riot, they don't listen. They don't care. They're just going to keep doing whatever they're doing. I guarantee you, the judge that let out the guy that stabbed the Ukrainian woman, I guarantee you that judge yesterday and today, I guarantee you she's woke up this morning and is out there stamping the release papers for more lifelong criminals who will inevitably commit more crime and will probably kill more people. I would put money on the fact that in the last like 2 or 3 days, the same judge that let this scumbag murderer out has probably let out another person who will murder somebody in the future. Like, it's just, it's pretty much guaranteed. They aren't going to change their behavior because the negative consequences are what they want. They don't even think it's bad. They don't even want you talking about it. They want you to shut up. They wish that this just wasn't filmed. They wish the camera wasn't there. They wish that this just happened quietly and they could just forget about it and ignore it. It's very annoying for them to have to deal with the consequences of their policies, deal with the outrage of the consequences of their policies. The consequences of their policies are what they want. If they didn't want this to be the case, they wouldn't support the policies that lead to this result over and over and over again. I mean, this is obvious to me. I mean, this seems obvious. Okay, so if you don't riot, they're just going to keep doing what they're doing because they don't actually fear you. They feel untouchable. And, you know, you being murdered on a train is just sort of an expedited version of what they're doing, you know, large scale anyway. So, you know, what do they care? Okay, so you don't riot. They don't care. They're just going to keep doing what you're doing. You do riot. Well, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to be January 6, 2.0. Doesn't matter if your, you know, purpose is justified and you're cause is righteous and your activity is perfectly in bounds with the Constitution and the First Amendment, the demand of redress of grievances. It doesn't matter to them. They'll throw you in jail for 2 decades under enhanced terrorism charges for being in a chat group with people that were in the riot, right? So, you know, it's a very convenient system for them. If you don't riot, they don't have to do what you want. If you do riot, they throw you in jail. It's very convenient. So we got to do something. There's got to be a change. There's got to be a dramatic reorganization of this country to prevent this type of stuff from happening. And again, to prevent the type of action that will come about if no change takes place. I mean, have y'all been on the internet recently? I mean, it truly is out of control at this point. And people are getting pissed and they're not going to stand for it anymore. So, like, again, even just appealing to the self-preservation of the bad guys, like, y'all got to do something or everything's going to burn. But maybe that's what they want. But maybe that's what they want at the end of the day. But it's just careful what you wish for, I guess, is what I'll say. Let's go to 18 now, clip number 18, because, you know, we've been talking about Brian Stelter, you know, being mad that we care that an innocent young woman was brutally murdered. He's very annoyed that he has to, you know, contend with that. And he wants to just call us racist for pointing out this sickening, not event, but trend, but long-lasting and well-established pattern of events that keep taking place over and over again in this country. But Greg Gutfeld has something to say about the claims of mental illness, that this guy was just mentally ill, and what a ridiculous distraction that is. He makes some great points. Let's watch.
I'm tired also of the term mental illness being used as a cover for criminality. When a thug targets a woman, that is not insane. He knows she's weaker. When he comes from behind with a knife, that's not insane. He minimizes her ability to inflict harm on him. When the thug flees, that's sane because he knows if he stays, he'll be arrested. So what would be insane would be if he were to face off against a man without a weapon, somebody like a terrorist. That would be insane. You'd go, okay, that's crazy. But almost all of these people that do this stuff, they go after women. That is not insane. That's self-preservation. This is not insanity. It's an evil mind. And it's an evil mind that is somehow excused in a culture that weaponizes victim status. In this case, mental illness, mental illness. And what is it about a society that contributes to this? And I'd say this based on my own personal evidence of being on city streets every single day in New York, that when a homeless person is shouting at people, he's not shouting, I really made a mess of my life. Boy, I really screwed up. No. His aggression is purely blaming other things and other people. He blames the world. He blames people. He blames you. So we're living in a progressive ideological nightmare where the worst in society is empowered by a sense of victimhood. So when this happens, they will still get people like Brian Stelter that says, oh, be careful of the racism, or other people saying, you know what? We really need to be concerned about our services to the mentally ill, which may or may not be true, but he's not mentally ill. He needs to be executed. Lastly, I asked Grok for a conservative count of the number of times the George Floyd video was played, looking at tweets and social media, Instagram, news networks. It came to a conservative number of 975 million times. That is not counting retweets. So that is a snapshot of this liberal disease, the hierarchy of problems. The media and politicians, people like Stelter, implore you not to cover one problem, but to amplify another one to a destructive degree that leads to riots, leads to dozens of deaths. But do not cover this other thing, because that is racist. Mm-hmm. And that is not as important. In the hierarchy of problems, we decide what you cover.
And again, it's been this way forever, and we have to stop, you know, allowing them to play these games, especially when, again, our position is not anything new. It's actually very simple. It's actually just like fundamental. It's like, you know, prima facie. It's just like what you're supposed to do as human beings. You punish the criminals. I mean, the irony of all of this is that, like, we're bringing in imports, we're bringing in migrants from all these different countries. In these countries that they come from, in Somalia, if you rape somebody, they kill you. Just done. It takes like a month. No appeals. You know, you're convicted of rape. Head to the head chopping block, please. You know, Saudi Arabia, all these other places, like, we're bringing in millions of people from countries where their law enforcement is just like, oh, you committed a crime? Time to die. And these are the countries we're supposed to think are better than America somehow, but they all want to come to America. And then we're expected to be infinitely patient and merciful with people who choose to commit crimes here. Clip number 19. So in response to the deliberate fostering of crime in big cities in America, with the Democrats defunding the police and hiring DAs who refuse to prosecute anybody, and the corresponding and immediate spike in violent crime across the entire country in every major city where this took place, Donald Trump is now sending the National Guard to Chicago, Operation Midway something. We've got some interesting developments there. I mean, this could kind of legitimately spiral into civil war, I think. I don't think it's all that far from happening. And I'll show you some videos to talk about that. But in response to this, of course, let's go to that now. Clip number 14, federal agents at the ICE detention center in Chicago have already had enough, and it's just getting started. Let's roll this. We may need to bring the audio down.
So be the men and women of ICE and the men and women of the Border Patrol. Today, Jason, we have the most secure border in the history of this nation right now because of President Trump's leadership and the men and women of the Border Patrol.
We also ICE have agents pushing back these dumbass liberals, screaming in their faces.
ICE is sending a message to the whole world that there are consequences for entering the country illegally. There are consequences for being here illegally.
So let's just pause it. I didn't even know Homan was talking over this. I'd just seen the video and assumed the audio was under it. Just watch the video. Just look at this video. Look at what we're seeing here. And think about the insane, and I do mean like mentally ill, like bravery of these people. I don't know if you call it bravery, just stupidity. You have like a 5 foot tall woman shoving a 6 foot two dude wearing Kevlar body armor, just weapons hanging off of him. And it's just like the confidence these people have in knowing that the soldiers are hamstrung and are incapable of defending themselves in the modern, you know, media landscape, get in trouble with this. But like at a certain point, they're going to stop being patient and they don't have to put up with dumbass screeching liberals yelling at them because they're arresting illegal immigrants. Again, I mean, these people think that they're like Kent State protesters. These people probably have posters of the woman putting the flower in the gun barrel at Kent State or whatever. It's like, okay, in that case, you had student protesters that were protesting against a war in which a great number of their friends had been sent overseas to die in an endless morass of just chaos and misery and pointlessness. And they were protesting peacefully and being violently shut down by the government. I actually have some sympathy for those people. I actually think that that's a good thing to be able to stand up and protest against. Now, when you actually look into it, there was a lot of violence being committed by the so-called peaceful protesters, and nothing is as simple as it seems. But at least in that case, they were actually protesting something actually real. They were protesting the senseless deployment of American young men to die in mud fields in Vietnam so that the CIA could start, you know, funneling drugs to the Contras. Yeah, they actually had something to protest. They were protesting actual evil committed by this government, and then they were shot for doing so. They have my sympathy. For the people in Chicago that are fighting ICE, what the hell are you doing? Who are you standing up for? Foreigners? People who break our laws? You're the enemy. You're not an American standing up against overreach of the American government. You're a traitor standing up for America's enemies. There's no debate about this. If you could show me an example of ICE going after anybody but an illegal immigrant, and it's like, oh, a legal immigrant got wrapped up in the shakedown and then he got let out 2 hours later. Oh my God. How horrible, right? And again, it's like, I am actually genuinely concerned about the overreach of the federal government. I don't want to normalize the deployment of the National Guard to major cities. So the major cities need to get their act together so that it doesn't have to be this way. which they could at any point refuse to do and then screech at the consequences. And now, if and when the federal government is weaponized against the American people to shut down legitimate peaceful protest or to force you to stay home because of some other lockdown scheme they're cooking up behind the scenes, no one's going to care because you people are screeching and pulling your hair out and acting like your world's on fire when all they're doing is throwing illegal immigrants into detention centers and sending them back to their home countries. Stop crying wolf when nothing bad is happening. Stop giving the National Guard every excuse that they could want. Again, and this happens over and over. I mean, it's sort of a brilliant play that they do. I always used to bring it up when it came to Black Lives Matter, the fact that for years on Facebook, I'd be the only person in my entire friends group posting things about police violence, posting videos of, you know, police overreactions, beating the crap out of some homeless guy. And going, guys, we're headed towards tyranny. This is authoritarian. The police should not be treating the American people like an enemy army that they're, you know, at war with. Nobody cared. Couldn't get any traction. But, oh, that's horrible. That was it. Then finally, there is a nationwide, massive, powerful movement ostensibly against police violence. Only it's about black people. Only it's about racism. Only they're not defunding the federal police force that is being sent in to, you know, crush Americans' civil liberties. They're defunding the local police that don't normally do that. Instead, will now be replaced by the federal police that do. So you've got this thing that is a concern. It's a real thing. Police violence, police over, you know, brutality, police killings being covered up and swept under the rug. It's a real problem. It's a real problem that now will never be solved because they decided to make it about race. Because they realized that, this sort of sentiment is bubbling up and we can't control it, better divert it. If we can't crush this energy rising up, then let's just direct it where we want it to go. And in that case, direct it towards the police is racist, y'all. And nothing gets done. Everything gets significantly worse. And now the people that for my entire life I'd been against the police, I'm now like, well, if it's between the police and the violent mob of idiots burning down buildings, I guess I'm on the police's side this time. And I don't want to be on the side of the federal law enforcement being deployed to American cities, but look at the people that are attacking them. They're just trying to do their job. They're trying to enforce American law, and they've got overweight middle school teachers yelling in their faces like they're untouchable. I guess I want a boot on their neck now. Whoops.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our ultramethylene blue, so I said, oh, with all our guests, we asked him to take it, and you just gave me your brief testimony, so I would look, because I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at thealexshowstore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultramethylene blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William. So when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, oh, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with methylene blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up, and so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, be honest though, because you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it, USP, didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. This one, I'm not trying to differentiate, it's just true, it's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Thank you. Now, back to our program.
Folks, second hour is on. I got so many videos to go to. I got to just start going to these. And hey, here's the good news. We're going mainstream, folks. I mean, we've already gone mainstream at this point, but our domination continues. We'll conquer it all. Our ideas are taking over. RFK Jr. went on Theo Von, and the man. Well, he sounds an awful lot like me. Let's go now to clip number 30.
This is what the National Security Agency is saying, that they believe that September 12th was the day that it actually began circulating.
Okay.
A month later, you have in New York City these Bill Gates hosting a coronavirus pandemic simulation. At that, his co-host is Avril Haines, the deputy director of the CIA. What is the CIA doing at a public health forum? They don't do public health. They do coup d'etat. But now Avril Haines is the top spy in America. She is the one who hid the torture tapes from Abu Ghraib. You know, during that CIA scandal. So that she now is the head of the National Security Agency, top spy in the country. She's also in charge of the coronavirus response. Oh, at the simulation, you have Avril Haines. You have people from all the social media companies. You have people from the pharmaceutical companies, mainly Johnson & Johnson, the biggest one. They do. And you have another guy, peculiar guy, George Gale, who's the head of the Chinese CDC.
Oh, man, he's not sneaky.
Anybody. So George Gale must have known
that
this was circulating at that point. By the way, any of your listeners who does not believe what I'm saying can go and look up Event 201. It's still on YouTube.
And this was before the pandemic.
It was after it started circulating, but none of us knew about it till January.
So this is before after the NSA had said that this had occurred.
The NSA now says, looking back,
this occurred.
When it occurs. And that time they didn't know.
So then there was a get together.
The world did not know until around January 3rd.
So then there was a big get together of some.
So then they're all together planning here's how we're going to handle a coronavirus pandemic if it happens.
Was Fauci there or no?
Fauci was not there, but there were people from his agency there. So, and the interesting thing is, there was no discussion of public health. Mm. They weren't saying, how are we going to get repurposed medications? How are we going to link 11 million doctors, frontline physicians around the world on a communication grid so that we can quickly figure out what's working, you know, what's working in Bangladesh, what's working in Argentina, what are the best protocols, what are the best repurposed medications that seem effective against
what's already working against this type of thing that we could ask people to get prepared and get on now to help themselves?
Well, no, but even when it starts, if a coronavirus pandemic starts, you want to be able to talk to all the doctors who are treating it around the world and find out, because there may be a guy in Argentina, which there was, Dr. Carvalho.
Who's got good intel.
Who was giving ivermectin to people. He gave it to 700 frontline healthcare workers, and he gave a placebo to 458. And of the 700 who got it, not one of them got COVID. Of the 400 who didn't got it, 53% got COVID. So he knew that very early on. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't being communicated. And if you were Fauci and really wanted to do a public health response, you'd be connecting all these doctors and mining what is the best intelligence, what's the best way to treat people, how do we avoid hospitalizations, how do we avoid deaths.
And you're saying they were just connecting more of the business side of it.
They weren't. The only thing they were doing was they were saying, how do we use a pandemic to clamp down totalitarian controls, to essentially execute a coup d'etat against democracy? How do we get rid of the Bill of Rights? Oh,
you think that they brought that up in this meeting?
Listen, I'm telling you, folks,
you can go watch the meeting right now. That's all they talk about. All they talk about was how to censor the media to spread their message. That's it.
The ancient blue wizard is who I be. The magic of methylene flows through me. His wars of info have gone through the ages to keep your minds locked in cages. Break free from the lies and save your soul, or the demonic agenda shall reach its goal. Upon this field, with steel in hand, I guard the truth across the land. No tyrant's crown, no foreign laws shall pierce the shield of InfoWars. This dagger's point, both sharp and true, defends the rights for me and you. So grab your phone without delay, and go to the website if you may. Order your dagger to stand in the fight, before the globalists turn out the lights.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, folks, we're going to keep talking about crime here. We just have so much to get into. And actually, let's begin with clip number one. As I was talking about in the last segment, what we want is not anything exceptional. It's not even anything new. It's not anything novel. It's not something that's unexpected or untried, right? The left comes up with these ideas that, I mean, aren't just novel. They are on their face ridiculous and absurd. Defund the police, pretty novel idea. The instant everybody heard about it, they thought, what the hell are you talking about? What does that even mean? We're not going to defund the police. That's crazy. And then 2 weeks later, they were passing bills to defund the police. And now we've seen the consequences, because what could possibly be the consequence of defund the police? There's only one consequence. Crime increases. That's all. It's the only possible. And by the way, police violence probably goes up. You demonize the police, the good people who are police are going to leave, and you're going to have to lower your standards to get substandard police who are more likely to commit violence or, you know, do something improperly that causes problems. So, again, like, if you're just looking, like, I don't know, if you're just looking at the two sides here, it's like one side is just a bunch of insane babies that just, none of their ideas even sound like they're going to work. And then they're all worse than you even expect. And the other side is just like, throw criminals in prison. What are we doing? And they're like, that side's crazy. That side's racist. It's like, just, I don't want to be stabbed in the neck. What? Can we do something to ensure that people aren't stabbed in the neck on the train? Like, is that really, am I the extremist here? And like, yeah, at a certain point, when you ask enough times, hey, tweet. It's funny because, again, I'm trying to teach my son this. I'm like, if you just do what you're told before we start yelling, we don't have to yell. It's very simple. It's like we're asking very nicely, very politely, please stop people from killing us. Please, please do something about the ridiculous crime. Anything, literally anything, do something to stop the criminals. In fact, just stop helping them. You don't even have to do anything. Just stop providing them help. Like, that would actually be a great start. You don't even have to do anything. You don't even have to stop crime. Just stop helping the criminals. That would be a fantastic start. We're the racists. We're the extremists. What they should understand is, we want you to do something to stop this because you are the lawful authority and it's your obligation to do something to stop this. If you don't do something to stop this, that doesn't mean we just have to be victims. It means we have to overthrow you and replace you with somebody who will protect us. The easy way or the hard way. And honestly, people are getting fed up and it's really getting to a breaking point at this point. And it is the strangest thing. Because our crime rates are not necessarily at historic highs. There's some debate on it, and it's kind of impossible to know because the law enforcement is itself occupied by leftists who will change the data to make it seem like crime is going down, because to them, that's all that matters. Just like they want to make it seem like you know, everybody gets the same grades, even if some people are illiterate and other people are geniuses, they want it to seem like everybody, so they give everybody the same grade. To them, that changes reality somehow. So we don't even know what the crime rate really is these days, to be honest with you. But we can see from our own experience, it's worse than we'd like it to be. It's pretty bad, one way or another. But in the early 90s, crime was even higher. Violent crime, higher still. Then something happened that caused a steep and like precipitous decline in violent crime. A massive decline, in fact, all throughout the 90s. It was the crime bill. It was the 1993 crime bill. Here's 1993 Senator Joe Biden talking about it.
We have predators on our streets. It doesn't matter whether or not the person that is accosting your son or daughter or my son or daughter, my wife, your husband, my mother, your parents. It doesn't matter whether or not they were deprived as a youth. It doesn't matter whether or not they're the victims of society. The end result is they're about to knock my mother on the head with a lead pipe, shoot my sister, beat up my wife, take on my sons. So I don't want to ask, what made them do this? They must be taken off the street. Tens of thousands of them, born out of wedlock, without parents, without supervision, without any structure, without any conscience developing, because they literally have not been socialized. We should focus on them now, not out of a liberal instinct for love, but for simple pragmatic reasons. Does not mean because we created them that we somehow forgive them or do not take them out of society to protect my family and yours from them. They are beyond the pale, many of those people. Beyond the pale. We have no choice but to take them out of society. We must make the streets safer. I don't care why someone is a malefactor in society. I don't care why someone is antisocial. I don't care why they become a sociopath. We have an obligation to burden them off from the rest of society. They are in jail, away from my mother, your husband, our families. We must take back the streets.
Yeah, great point, Joe. Can I vote for him? Where did he go? How is it that the Democrats from the 90s sound more extreme than the extreme right-wingers Republicans today? I agree with everything I just heard from Joe Biden. I don't care why they are the way they are. I just don't want them killing my family. Now, I do care about why they are the way they are in that I want to correct the problem. I want to actually genuinely investigate what's gone wrong and try to make corrective measures to fix it that are not predicated on the assumption that it must be racism and anything that we do must be designed to lower the perceived existence of racism. I mean, it's sort of the climate change agenda to race. Atheism is Unstoppable calls it the racism of the gaps, right? If there is a gap, it must be racism. There's no other explanation. There's an achievement gap. One race doesn't achieve as much as another. It must be because they're being oppressed and there's a racist scheme against them. They don't score as high on tests. It must be that the tests are racist. They go to jail more often. The laws must be racist. And the only answer is racism, and the only solutions have to be focused on destroying racism. What if that's not the case? What if there are other issues? And there are, obviously. And the black community in America obviously needs some love and care, needs some extra attention on them. Not to say you've done nothing wrong, you're beautiful, and everything you do is perfect. Those damn white people just need to give you what they have. Vote for me and I'll take it from them. That's the opposite of what these people need. What the black community needs is self-respect and to build up their own communities. And to not be dragged down to the lowest common denominator by politicians trying to make a quick buck or scam some votes off people by, you know, claiming that it's racism and giving them the out for their own behavior. It might sound a little harsh. That's how love sounds sometimes. But I'll ask, what makes more sense? What we just saw from Joe Biden? You know, I don't care why this person's a sociopath. I care that they're near my family and they need to be put away. I don't care that, you know, they have an excuse as to why they commit crimes. I don't want them victimizing innocent people. We don't deserve that. That was 30 years ago. 30 years later, the Weld County Sheriff in Colorado is issuing warnings about a violent offender released back onto the streets today. Clip number 36. And this is the, this is one of the characters they've released back. I mean, this is where we're at this point, and we can bring it down because it is a lot of, cursing. And violent actions here. But this is a guy that is just, they're just like, oh, by the way, we're letting him back on the street. We're issuing a warning that we are letting a violent criminal out on the street. Fair warning, everybody. Now, you're not allowed to defend yourself against him, obviously. You'll be charged for murder if you actually succeed in beating the guy. There he is, knocking a guy out and then beating him while he's down. And so the Colorado sheriff is like, oh, by the way, we're letting him out. Watch out, because he's very dangerous. He's almost certainly going to attack somebody again. Next time we see this guy, he'll be in handcuffs, probably covered in blood, because he's victimized an innocent person. So, fair warning, here he is. Thanks. I mean, how crazy is that? The Weld County Sheriff in Colorado has issued a warning about a violent offender released back onto the streets today. Thanks for the warning. Can you keep him behind bars? Which is better? Which approach is better? So, again, it's like, what do we even have police for at this point? So the police, the sheriff in Colorado is releasing a violent offender who clearly is just a repeat offender. And they're like, hey, be careful. He's probably going to kill somebody. So it could be you. Watch out. So they're not exactly doing very much. Clip 21 here. This is Jasmine Crockett talking about what law enforcement is really about. It's not supposed to prevent crime, okay? Yeah, Northern Colorado Sheriff wants to warns public a very dangerous person he was forced to release from jail. People are talking about creating lists of these judges. I think that's a great idea. I think we need to compile a master list. I don't know. There used to be a hub website where you can go to and just see, like, all this information is public. And look at, like, which judge has let off repeat offenders and what have they gone on to do? And we just have, like, a judge and then this massive list underneath that of all of the crimes that have been committed because they've gone soft on criminals. And I think they should be charged with the crime. I think part of your position as a judge is that you're capable of making decisions correctly. You're called a judge, after all. You should be able to express some judgment on these things. If you let out somebody who goes on to commit a crime, especially if it's like the next day or something, like you're proven incapable of doing your job. You should be removed pretty much immediately and probably charged with a crime. And I'm telling you, it's just a matter of time before somebody takes justice into their own hands. And I, again, am surprised that it hasn't happened yet. Because, like, put yourself in the position of, like, a family member that this has happened to. Like, if a family member of mine was killed by a repeat offender who had just been let out after committing another violent crime, I wouldn't even necessarily blame the criminal alone. Like, you wouldn't blame a rabid animal. It's like, yeah, it's his fault. Yeah, he's bad. But our authorities who we have empowered to take people like that off the street had him in custody and then released him. And then sicked him on my family. I would blame the judge. He never would have been out. if it weren't for the judge. And he shouldn't have been out. So, you know, I guess, you know, once you're in that position, it's more difficult and you don't want to like go to jail for the rest of your life, especially like when you leave your kids parentless. Like it sucks. It's tough, but you know, a certain part of you, a certain part of me is like, if this happens, I'm just like, yeah, screw life. I'm just going to go get justice. That's more important to me than life. So, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of time before people start taking this into their own hands. But let's go to Jasmine Crockett, clip 21 here. Here's what she thinks law enforcement is about. She's just dumb as hell. Let's watch.
I want to be clear that, like, law enforcement isn't to prevent crime. Law enforcement solves crime, okay? That is what they are supposed to do. They are supposed to solve crimes, not necessarily prevent them from happening, per se.
Per se. One thing about the Jasmine Crocketts of the world, they like to say things twice. They like to say things twice. They think I think it tricks people into thinking they're saying more than they're saying, but they literally just say the same thing multiple times. Law enforcement isn't supposed to prevent crime. It's supposed to solve crime. Like, it's not supposed to, like, prevent crime per se. But yes, you just said that. Thank you again for that. Congresswoman Jamie Crockett. Law enforcement isn't supposed to prevent crime. It's supposed to solve crime. But they don't solve crime. I wonder, anybody listening to my voice, has a cop ever solved a crime for you? Hands up if a cop has solved a crime for you. They don't solve crimes. They'll go arrest the person if you tell them who did it to you. And they'll investigate if it's a murder. That's pretty much it. I asked Rock about this. What percentage of crimes in America get solved? About 36% of reported crimes are cleared by arrest or exceptional means, e.g., identifying a suspect but being unable to arrest due to circumstances like suspect's death. Violent crimes have had a higher clearance rate of around 41% in 2023. Murder and non-negligent homicide or non-negligent manslaughter has a 58% clearance rate, which is pretty high. Rape only has approximately 25% clearance rate. Aggravated assault, around 40% clearance rate. Robbery, around 30% clearance rate. Property crimes have an even lower clearance rate, around 15 to 20%, with specific crimes like burglary and larceny theft often falling below 15%. Now, this is just going off Grok numbers. I don't really trust these anyway. I think that sounds high to me. I think those numbers are probably being skewed by the fact that a lot of people don't report crimes that are done to them because they know that the police aren't going to solve them. Like, that's the boat I'm in. My car got broken into a couple months ago. I didn't report it. Why am I going to report it? Why would I report it? Are they going to come dust for fingerprints? I wish. If they actually did their job, if their job, as Jamie Crockett says, to solve crimes, then if a crime committed, they would come solve it. So do we need to call them police? Why don't we call them, like, notationers, note takers, report filers. That's essentially what they are. So
also known as bureaucrats.
Yeah. Bureaucrats. Yes. Armed bureaucrats. That is the police. So in Jasmine Crockett's perception of the world, police solve crime. The reality, the police will show up. They'll write down on a piece of paper that a crime happened to you. I'll give you that piece of paper as if you didn't know. And they F off. That's what police do 99% of the time. The one time they are useful is when they do prevent crime by their mere presence places, their mere apparent appearance on street corners. Maybe we just treat the ghettos like crows. We just need scarecrows. What if we just put like police boxes with tinted windows? Maybe there's police in there. Maybe there's not. But it certainly looks like there's a police in there. Can we just put like scarecrows or like you hang the owl on your roof to stop birds from nesting there? Can we get a big police officer kind of like spinning a little bit on the corner of the ghettos in America. Maybe that'll solve it. Maybe we don't need to deploy the National Guard if we just have scare criminals. Scarecrows for criminals. So Jasmine Crockett thinks it's law enforcement's job to solve crime. Okay, good luck with that. But of course, she, like every other politician, now decrying police and talking about how it's racist to be protected, of course, has a permanent and continuous security detail armed and licensed to protect her from anybody, just like the mayor of Chicago, who is being asked about the hypocrisy of calling it racist to want police to protect people on the street while having 150 police officers on his rotating 24/7, 365 personal police detail. 150 personal police officers for him, but you don't need one. How racist of you. Let's go to clip number 19 now.
And your wife, Stacy, be willing to cut your security detail from 150 sworn police officers and put those police officers back on the street where they can protect real Chicagoans?
So we're very proud of the work that we're doing collectively to ensure that our police officers have the resources that they need. As I've said repeatedly, it's policing and affordable housing. It's policing and youth employment. It's policing and mental and behavioral health care services. It's going to take all of us, the business community, the philanthropic community. We're working collectively with Cook County government, the state of Illinois, the state's attorney as well. The volume of cases that we are pushing towards the state's attorney so that we can continue to close out these cases as we really drill down with our detectives division as they solve
what
crime,
is he talking
as they get
about?
The evidence over the state's attorney, gives her the ability to make the prosecution
He's
so
not
that we
even
can continue to
deter
crime in the city of Chicago. That's the holistic approach that we're taking. Thank you.
Okay, I need to be a politician. I need to become a politician. Is that how easy it is, really? He didn't even pretend to try to answer the question. The question was, if you're going to do so, if you're, you know, talking about protecting Chicagoans and that there's not enough resources, not enough police on the street, what about the 150 cops that protect you and your family? Will you put them on the street? Not even like pointing out the obvious and glaring hypocrisy of the guy denying you police protection, having a 150 man security task force 24/7, 365. But like, let that sink in. But he's not even asking about that. He's saying, well, you've got 150 police for your personal security detail. Will you put some of them on the street? And the guy's response is like, well, we got a philanthropies. And I mean, house prices though, but, and we got to work together. And it's like, just not even remotely close to the question. The guy's like, thank you, sir. Thank you for that answer. And I guarantee you, Democrats are like, yeah, that's right. It's a whole of society. Nah, he's smart. He gets it. These stupid right wingers thinks about just putting police on. No, it's a whole of society approach. And it's like, you idiots. You not get what he just did. He just completely sidestepped the entire question, completely ignored the question being asked, and just rambled for like a minute straight saying absolutely nothing. Saying absolutely nothing. Is that how easy it is to be a politician? I could say even less of something. I mean, if you talk about Pokemon cards, would that be any less ridiculous? So like, will you put the 150 guards that you have on the street? And he's like, well, look, the sparkly Pikachu is clearly the rarest, but the Charizard is significantly stronger. And they're like, thank you, sir. Thank you for that answer. It didn't make any sense. It meant nothing, but thank you for rambling at us, sir.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshow.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimate Methylene Blue, thealexjonesshow.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in, and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog shit to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
To the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. We got some breaking news here. Israel strikes target Hamas leaders in Qatar. Israel launched a strike targeting Hamas's leadership in Qatar on Tuesday, officials said, further widening its campaign against the militant group as negotiations over ending the war in the Gaza Strip appear stalemated before a new military offensive there. Black smoke rose over the skyline of the Qatar capital, Doha, while with authorities there acknowledging the strike. It wasn't immediately clear if anyone was hurt in the attack. The assault marks the second time the energy-rich nation has been directly attacked in the nearly 2 years of war that have gripped the wider Middle East since Hamas's attack on Israel in 2023, even as it served as a key negotiator in efforts to end the conflict. It also calls into question whether negotiations immediately will continue. Well, you see, Israel is just desperate to get the hostages back, and they just, you know, keep accidentally killing the
negotiators. Whoops, whoopsies. Yeah, they're trying so hard to get a deal, and then negotiators die. Got to start over. Whoopsies. It wasn't immediately clear how the attack was carried out, though Israeli military spokesman Colonel Adrey referred to Israel's Air Force carrying out the strike. Qatar Airways planes continued landing in Doha amid the strike, even as at least one Qatar Air Force aircraft took off on patrol over the country. Israeli officials have sent mixed messages throughout the year, relying on Qatari mediation while also questioning its willingness to put pressure on Hamas. In a statement over the attack, which didn't specifically name Qatar, Israel's military said Hamas's leaders were directly responsible for the brutal October 7th massacre and have been orchestrating and managing the war against the state of Israel. The Israeli said it used precise munitions and additional intelligence in the strike without elaborating. An Israeli official speaking with the Associated Press on condition of anonymity to discuss details beyond the statement confirmed that Israelis targeted Hamas in Qatar. Qatar condemned what it referred to as a cowardly Israeli attack on Hamas's political headquarters in Doha. Foreign Ministry spokesman Majed El Ansari called it a flagrant violation of all international laws and norms. Well, I mean, it's Israel, so. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's their motto. I'm not sure what the Hebrew is, but I'm pretty sure the motto is Israel, flagrant violations of all international laws and norms. Israel, the land of flagrant violations of all international laws and norms, spoken and unspoken, legal and illegal. It doesn't matter to them. It genuinely doesn't matter to them, even a little bit. So a lot of people are, responding hugely to this, but it's hard for me to tell what's a big deal and what isn't. I mean, the crew runs in this story. Israel just bombed Qatar. And my response is like, okay, they bombed Syria yesterday. They're still bombing Lebanon. They had a big bombing campaign in Lebanon the day before. I mean, they're bombing Lebanon. They're bombing Syria. They're bombing Gaza, obviously, ahead of a, giant operation there. They're bombing Qatar. They're bombing Yemen. They're bombing Greta Thunberg. They're bombing Venezuela. I mean, yeah, this is what they do. See, they failed on their attempt to take out Iran a couple months ago. So now they're working their way around the periphery, trying to weaken them by, assassinating their allies all over the world. I mean, again, you have to imagine if this was America, and like, this is the thing I don't get. Just why these really people are so, stoked about all of this. Yeah, no, they literally bombed Greta Thunberg. Greta Thunberg's Gaza flotilla hit by drone, organizers claim. One of the Gaza-bound vessels carrying aid and pro-Palestinian activists, including Greta Thunberg, was struck by a drone, the flotilla organizers have claimed. Global Sumund Flotilla, GSF, posted footage on Instagram that appeared to show the Portuguese-flagged vessel being hit by an object and said all six passengers and crew were safe after the incident outside the Tunisian port of Sidi Bou Said. Tunisian authorities, quoted by Reuters, said reports a drone was involved had no basis in truth, adding the initial inspection indicated an explosion originated inside the vessel. The GSF said their family boat was struck in Tunisian waters and fire had damaged the main deck. In a series of video published on their Instagram, spokespeople for the GSF said an incendiary device caused a fire on board the vessel, which the crews were able to extinguish. So, Israeli Air Force allegedly struck several Syrian cities. This also from today, the Israeli Air Force allegedly conducted airstrikes on Homs in central Syria and Latakia in Syria's Mediterranean coastline on Monday night, according to Syrian state media. Footage seen by the Jerusalem Post appears to show a large cloud of smoke and debris arising over the vicinity of Homs. Reports from local media also claim the IAF has conducted strikes near Palmyra. The military has not yet confirmed the strikes or the targets. So, I mean, just imagine. I mean, literally just imagine if America was just like simultaneously bombing the capitals of Canada and Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras. And I mean, it's just like, how would you feel if that was the case? We can't even arrest criminals. We can't even throw serial killers in prison. Yeah, I don't know. If it was me, I agree with Lucas Gage. Israel needs to be put down like a rabid dog. Mel at Village Crazy Lady. What the actual F? There are 10,000 American troops stationed in Qatar right now. How the hell could Trump let Israel bomb Doha like this? And yes, according to N12 News, President Trump personally issued the green light for Israel to strike on Qatar. But why, though? Qatar is not our enemy. They've been an ally in the region. They host, like, the largest military base there in America. Israel didn't let us host military bases on their land. Qatar lets us host on their land. And it's kind of ironic, just a insurrection Barbie on X put out this tweet that was like, Qatar, Qatar, Qatar. It's all Qatar. If you can't see that, you're blind. Which is funny because the latest talking point out of Israel is Israel can't control America. It's too small. It's only the size of New Jersey. You're saying a place the size of New Jersey controls big America, small and big. That doesn't make any sense. Like, that is literally the number one argument right now that they're all making. Because, again, all these people are NPCs. They're all getting orders. They're all being directed on how to discuss this, from Misfit Patriot. He's arguing with me to anybody else you see arguing. They all say the same thing at the same time. And their messages change over time because none of them are legitimate or real anyway. And it's just, you know, changing whatever perception demands at that point. But the status quo, the thing being said now is Israel small, America big. I think that's all you need to know. And especially they're like, there's only 12 million people in Israel, or however many there are. 4 million people in Israel. There's only 6 million people in Israel. How could 6 million people ever control a country of 300 million? That's crazy. It's Qatar, you know, the country of 100,000 people. Look up the population of Qatar. The population of Qatar, the country, is quite a bit. But everybody is not a Qatari. They're not Qatari. The actual Qatari people, there's like literally like 150,000 of them. So it just seems kind of ironic to me. That's the population of Qatar, but that's not the Qataris. Because the way these other, the way the countries in the Middle East do it, they'll have a country where like 10% is the native population and 90% are migrants. Which you would think would turn out like, you know, Ireland or England. Because you see that there's kind of a similar, you know, trajectory going on. Only in the Middle East, all of those migrants benefit the people that live there. See, they actually take citizenship seriously. And so it's like, if you're a Qatari, you're a Qatari. And everybody else can come live in Qatar, and they can come work in Qatar, and they can contribute to Qatar. Yeah, there you go. Roughly 380,000 as of 2025. The entire population of Qatari people is under 400,000. So there's a bit of an irony that Israel is saying Israel's too small to control things. It's Qatar, which has less than 500,000 people totally worldwide. A little bit odd, a little bit strange. So there's only 380,000 Qataris, but it's a population of 3 million. So they're like 10% of their entire population, and yet they're enriched. They're benefited by all the migrants. See, all the migrants come in, and first of all, they only come in if they have money and can help you. They're not bringing in hobos. They're not bringing in refugees. They're not bringing in people that the Qatari state has to take care of. They're bringing in people with money to invest. And they say, yeah, come in, invest in Qatar, give us your money, build infrastructure here. You will never even sniff a Qatari citizenship. You will have to go home eventually. But in the meantime, come here, spend your money here, and we'll give it to the Qataris. And so they benefit. They do incredibly well. A little bit different than, you know, Ireland or England or something like that. Even though Qatar has a higher percentage of migrants to citizens than anywhere in Europe, their government actually cares about the Qatari people, and it only allows immigrants in if it benefits the Qatari people first and foremost. So that's how they've been able to build. That's how they've been able to get all this money, all this investment. They've got natural oil reserves. They sort of tread the line between Iran and Israel, being a sort of neutral party in all of it. They've done very, very exceptionally well at managing their wealth and, you know, managing their family affairs there. But Israel can just bomb them if they want, and Trump's just like, yeah, sounds good. He gave the green light for that. So again, they literally bombed the negotiators. They bombed the very people that they were apparently on the cusp of getting an agreement with. Trump said to give Israel green light on strike on Hamas leadership in Qatar. What is wrong with Trump, man? Israel conducts precise strike in Qatar targeting Hamas leaders. What is wrong with Trump? I mean, it's almost like they have him. It's almost like they have him pegged. I don't know. It's like, is he that scared of looking weak? Is that what it is? That's like Israel keeps just like making him look like a bitch. Because he's out there going, oh, we're about to have this Hamas agreement. I'm going to bring peace to the area. You know, they're going to return the hostages. I'm going to be the big hero. And then Israel's just like, F you, bombs the negotiators. And so then Trump is going, okay, well, I can either get mad at this and go, oh, Israel, you know, bombed Qatar and that was bad. But then I look weak. So instead, I'll say it was my idea. I'll say I gave them approval. It's not that they made me look like a bitch and keep, you know, doing things that are directly in contradiction to my designs, and I never do anything back to them, and I can't ever, you know, impose anything on them. I just constantly do whatever they say because I'm their bitch. No, he's the one that decided. He's the one. And it's like, why would you even take credit for that? So you're the jackass? So you're the dumbass warmonger that's just doing everything for Israel? Like, you either got to stop them or you're their bitch. That's all. And I'm sorry for using the language, but like, does Trump know that he looks like this? Like, somebody get this message to Trump that we all think he looks like a bitch. And we all think Israel eats his lunch every single day. And that all of his bluster and all of his self-importance, like, they're laughing at you. You get that they're laughing at you, right? We're mad. I'm not laughing. I'm mad that you are such a bitch. But Israel is just laughing their asses off at how easily you are controlled. Does he know that? Does he know we feel that way? Somebody should tell him. Qatar condemned what it referred to as a cowardly Israeli attack on Hamas's political headquarters. Yes, the Israeli, I love it. Seriously, we have a new Israeli motto here. Israel, a flagrant violation of all international laws and norms. Qatar confirms it will not tolerate this reckless Israel behavior and the ongoing disruption of regional security, nor any act that targets its security and sovereignty. I'll tell you what, boys, tell you what, guys. I don't know if I need to be the one to tell you this, but right now you got Iran, Syria, Libya, Yemen, Oman, Qatar, Egypt. You guys all hate Israel. You should all attack Israel. You should all team up against Israel because they're not going to stop this until you're all dead. So I think you need to team up on them. America's not going to do it. I wish we would. If we were serious about anything that we pretend to care about as Americans, it would be Israel would be number one on our chopping block. But we don't mean any of that stuff. We don't actually mean that we don't like terrorism or we're, you know, out there defending the little guy. We care about democracy. Like, all that's bullcrap when it comes to Israel. we're just supporting the most horrifying genocide since Genghis Khan, and we're contributing our weapons and we're giving permission. So, I mean, I don't know if you expect America to still retain some like European independence, European style character that's like not just under the thumb of the Israeli Jewish banking cabal, but like that's an illusion. We don't have that anymore. That's the treat that they dangle in front of Americans to convince them to go along with their insane plans. But like, this is all up to you guys. You got to do this. And they got to know that, like, what is stopping them? I guess what's stopping them is Israel nuking the entire world, because they do genuinely have the entire world blackmailed like that with the Samson option. So maybe it's a little bit more sophisticated than I think. But, like, you're telling me the combined force of Qatar and Yemen and the Houthis and Iran and Lebanon and Syria and Jordan and Gaza and the West Bank and Egypt, you're telling me the combined forces couldn't just put a stop to all this? I think they could. I don't understand why they don't. I understand why they didn't in October of 2023. It seemed like that was the time. So again, I don't know, you know, they're like, we're not going to tolerate this reckless Israeli behavior. I mean, yes, you are. What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? The proposal presented by Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, for the negotiation calls for a negotiated end of the war and a withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza once the hostages are released and the ceasefire is established, according to Egyptian and Hamas officials familiar with the talks, who spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity to discuss the closed-door discussions. So the militant group was supposed to, Hamas was supposed to respond to this within days, but now I guess the negotiators are probably dead. So an official in Egypt who had also been mediating a potential ceasefire told the AP that the strike came when a meeting by Hamas officials over the talks had been scheduled for the site. The official spoke on conditions of anonymity because he wasn't authorized to talk to reporters. Okay, so they literally bombed the hostage negotiators. When we were on the cusp of an agreement that apparently Israel had, so the way it's gone recently, and it feels even stupid to talk about this because the fact is that Israel does not want a peace. It allowed the hostages to be taken. It could have gotten them back on October 8th. It could have stopped them from being taken on October 7th. It could have gone in and hyper-focused on getting the hostages out instead of bombing all of Gaza to rubble. And none of it matters to them. It's all just an excuse. They want to take over Gaza. They want to expel every non-Jew from the West Bank. They want to create greater Israel. They want to be one of the poles of the multipolar world with the entire of the Middle East and the transit corridors. They go through the Red Sea and the Egyptian, whatever it's called, man-made river. Why can I not think of the word? They want control of that, and that's what they're doing. The hostages are the excuse. October 7th was allowed to happen to give them the excuse they wanted to justify the panic and the outrage and the, hyper-urgent feeling. Don't think about it. Don't ask questions. Don't consider it. It's an emergency. Act. You act now. Bomb now. Right? They gotta keep that up. And if they wanted to, a negotiated peace, if they wanted an end to Hamas, if they wanted the hostages back, all of those things were imminently available to them within a week of the October 7th attack. They deliberately scuttle every single attempt to create this. So the latest, if you want to know the puppet show going on, the latest in the puppet show is that the Kabuki theater, shadow puppets, is that there was a agreement that they got Hamas to agree to, and then Israel refused to agree to it. So they took that same agreement and reworked some of it. Now Israel agrees to that reworked settlement, and they're waiting on Hamas to agree on it. And then they killed all the Hamas negotiators. So whoops, now there's no agreement. Guess we have to storm Gaza. Storm Gaza City. They're leafleting all of Gaza City right now, telling people to evacuate, which is difficult
because it's an open air prison. They can't evacuate. There's nowhere for them to go. I think they know that. I have a feeling that they're perfectly aware of that. Well, we'll continue on this on the other side. I do want to get back a little bit to the crime topic. But maybe since this just broke, we'll just move into the Israeli stuff now. Let's go to clip number 47. Here's Tucker Carlson on Piers Morgan about Israel's foreknowledge of the 9/11 attacks. Let's watch.
Israel. No, of course I didn't allege that, you know, the Jews did it. I don't even know what that means. I think, in fact, saying things like that is a way to discredit real questions. Right. Like, we know, I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu on camera right after said this is a good thing because it brings the United States into a conflict that we've been involved in on an existential level for decades. I mean, he said that out loud. I'm not guessing. You can pull the tape. We know that a group of Israeli art students, who clearly were not art students, clearly some of them were aligned with Israeli intelligence, were arrested and held for quite some time in the United States before being released without charges. And we know that a group of them, again, I'm quoting an FBI document here, not the internet, filmed the attacks on 9/11, and I'm quoting, seemed to have foreknowledge of those attacks. Now, you were not allowed to follow up in any of this. Fox News did a series with Brit Hume and Carl Cameron, which many people have seen in a bootleg version on the internet, but they did it like within weeks, saying, what is this? There was an Israeli spy ring in the United States and they clearly knew 9/11 was coming. This is Fox News. They pulled that under pressure. They pulled that off the internet. It's not searchable in any Fox News archive, but they aired it. I know the people who did it. Of course, I worked with them for years. They're real people. They're not crazy. In fact, they're pro-Israel, but they had a fact set before them and they reported it, which is called journalism, and subsequent generations have been forbidden from noting what is now factually true. Those are factually true statements. Now, we tried to interview some of those people. One lives in the United States in California and made no headway whatsoever. And we knew as we did it, by the way, that we're going to be attacked as anti-Semites or something.
And that's really just barely scratching the surface. And again, it is an obvious tactic at this point. I hope we're not falling for it still. And I genuinely hope the average Jew out there who's not involved in the high-level conspiracies understands how their identity has been hijacked. And I just gotta say, I mean, you gotta kind of rein your boys in. You gotta rein your people in. Because again, every day there's more stuff like this. Every day there's more discussions. And it's at this point, I can't say anything on X about anything without every comment talking about the Jews. And it's like, I'm kind of sick of it. But clearly, there's a very dangerous anti-Semitic tide rising right now. And it's entirely because of the actions of Israel and the high-level Jews that control America. So, I mean, you got to do something about it.
Here it is, Bovine Colostrum Plus. This is what I was looking for. This is the only thing that works on a monstrous stomach like mine. If it works for me, it will work for you. Order yours at the website below.
Alex on a top-secret shoreline mission to handpick nature's vitamin-packed sea moss before the globalists patent it. He's scooping it up like it's Cyber Monday in the supplement aisle. But suddenly, the 20-foot-tall sea moss mutant erupts from the tide pool like Godzilla. Alex dashes like he just saw a new Fauci vaccine. Will he make it or become the monster's meal? To be continued.
Back, folks. Still have a lot to talk about in today's show. I do want to go to this video because even though it's libtard Joe Scarborough, he apparently used to be a Republican. He went toe-to-toe with a Princeton elitist professor over Trump's crime crackdown. And listen, I don't know who's arguing in favor of crime, but like, you're going to lose the argument. It's a terrible position to have. Let's watch.
Let's think about policing differently as we try to address an issue of safety, which every community deserves. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, Joe, take it.
Well, but the thing is, you talk about how cops on the streets won't make a difference. I will tell you that one poll after another has suggested otherwise. When you speak to Black Americans, when you speak to poorer Americans, there's a Washington Post poll that we've talked about quite a bit over the past several weeks since we talked about additional troops in Washington, D.C. And that is 91% of D.C. residents said that crime was a serious problem. The people that said crime was a very serious problem overwhelmingly were Black residents. Those who said it was not a serious crime predominantly were white, rich residents. And the demographic who said that crime was the biggest problem were Black women. I go back to 2020 when there were a lot of hipsters talking about defunding the police, a lot of political activists talking about defunding the police. You can find New York Times articles in real time about communities predominantly with people of color in some of the poorest and most dangerous parts of New York City. And their city councilmen and city councilwomen were saying, defund the police. What are you talking about? We need more police on the streets. We need more safety officers in our school. We need more police officers making sure our children and our mothers can walk to school and walk to work without being stopped by gang members. So I guess that's my question back to you. When you're speaking generally about this, are you speaking as an academic? Are you speaking as somebody who reflects these communities who say we live in a dangerous city? I know rich white people in Georgetown may feel more comfortable, or in Northwest Washington may feel more comfortable, but in Southeast, we don't feel more comfortable. We want more cops.
No, Joe, I'm not just speaking as an academic. I'm speaking as a Black man who has been reared in the United States with a deep-seated suspicion about whether or not police actually are engaged in protecting our communities, right? Having had the talk, right, from a young man, from a young boy. So there's not this relationship to the police that you're presupposing. And let me just say this, I think.
I'm not presupposing anything. I am giving you data. And by the way, are you living the same experience that you're talking about that we've talked about on this show for 18 years with you and Gene Robinson and everybody else? But is your experience in Princeton the same as somebody's in Anacostia?
Of course not. Of course not. There are class differences. There are class differences that
the person in Anacostia.
Again, what is even the argument? The argument is absurd on the face of it. And, I mean, if you just want to, this is just from today. Beloved Auburn University professor stabbed to death while walking her dog with suspect facing death penalty. White woman, Julie Gard Schnuel, found dead in a wooded area of Keisel Park in Auburn, Alabama. Killed by a random Black dude, Harold Rashad Dabney III, who'd been charged with two counts of capital murder. And, You know, I wonder if this was the first crime he ever committed. Wouldn't that be something? You know, wouldn't that be something if the first crime these guys ever committed was randomly stabbing an innocent woman in the park? Or do you think it's more likely that they worked their way up to that? Swifty College co-ed was executed as she slept by career criminal who broke in, then went on shopping spree with her credit cards. Another anti-white racist attack, former Auburn University professor stabbed death while walking her dog amid a U.S. Crime crisis.
The ancient blue wizard is who I be. The magic of methylene flows through me. These wars of info have gone through the ages to keep your minds locked in cages. Break free from the lies and save your soul, or the demonic agenda shall reach its goal.
Upon this field, with steel in hand, I guard the truth across the land. No tyrant's crown, no foreign laws shall pierce the shield of InfoWars. This dagger's point, both sharp and true, defends the rights for me and you. So grab your phone without delay, and go to the website if you may. Order your dagger to stand in the fight, before the globalists turn out the lights.
Watching the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. I still have a lot more videos to show you and a lot more articles to cover, but I kind of want to open up the phone lines with a question about, like, what can we do about this? About the crime, about the deliberate creation of crime, facilitating of crime by Democrats. Like, I hate to think that people are falling for this, but you saw the protests last week in D.C., massive crowds protesting against basic law and order in their city. And they weren't saying that the National Guard is abusing their power. They're not arresting political dissidents. They're not going after Trump's enemies. They're arresting murderers and car thieves and muggers. What's the big deal? What are you complaining about? What is going on in their mind? How do we get through to these people? That's really what I want to know, because I'm at a loss. I'm at a complete loss as to what we do about this. Especially since Americans are so good in general, and like, they really don't like being mean. They don't like feeling like they're, you know, contributing to some bad situation, and they're told that it's racist to want crime to go down. It's like, how do we get through to them? How do we talk to them about this? Or how do we get them to care that their race is being targeted and slated for destruction? Is it possible to get them to care, or are they too brainwashed and are genuinely suicidal and we just need to sort of cut the fat and just move on without them? I'd like to get them on our team. I'd like to sort of, you know, be able to utilize the numbers that we still have to protect ourselves from the intended destruction of our race. But like, try telling that to a boomer. I don't think they're capable of processing it. So, I mean, what's the answer here? So, I mean, for me, you know, paying attention to all this stuff, it was never the right wingers that made me conscious of race. It's the left wingers. It's the unintended consequence of the racializing of everything. Like, I never used to see race. I'm sure pretty much all of us feel this way. Anybody that grew up in the 90s or anything, I mean, it's not just a talking point. Like, it's real. You really were trained as a child to not see race, to not put any value in that, to not think about things in racial context. I mean, it was bred into me, as was anybody in my generation. But then you hear the racist talk from the left over and over, constantly talking about race, and suddenly you become conscious of it. And suddenly you're, you know, walking around a neighborhood on vacation, you know, you're in Cape Cod, you're going, man, this is so nice. White people are the best. I love how nice this place is because it's so white. And it's like, I never would have thought that before, but you put racial consciousness into people's minds by constantly harping on race, and you're going to start to notice that sort of stuff. And it's funny because it's my non-white friends that would notice it first. Like, I'm sure I've told the story before, but I was walking around a tennis court in Colorado, and I was talking on the phone to my friend who's Middle Eastern. I was like, man, this place is crazy. They have like $200 rackets just sitting out for anybody to use. It was a resort, and they just had literally $250, $300 rackets, really nice rackets, just hanging up on the fence all day, just out there. I'm like, this is crazy. How do they just leave this stuff out here? This is crazy. I'm talking to my friend on the phone. He's like, well, it's because it's all white people in Colorado. I'm like, what? I was like, yeah, dude, white people don't steal. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, maybe that is what it is. I don't know. That's not a part of my consciousness. It's not something I, like, would think about. It's non-white people that are like, yeah, it's because white people don't steal, dude. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Thanks. Thanks for telling me that. I don't know. So they have, you know, really forced us to become racial, really forced us to see things racially. And when you do, you start noticing how horrible white people get treated for no reason. But is that just because I'm like paying attention to this stuff? And if I was just watching, you know, Fox News all the time, would I even notice any of this? If I wasn't both watching the far right and the far left and taking in all that information, if I was a normie, would I ever have, you know, come to that conclusion? That like, okay, white people are being targeted for their race, therefore they need to be defended as a race. Is that offensive to somebody? Is that, I mean, I would treat black people the same way if they were the ones under attack, but they're not. So the white people are the ones that need defending. But most white people have been trained to not consider that option. So what do we do to get through to them? I think part of it might just be not talking about race, but just having race as part of the conversation. Like, is that the way we should do it? Just sort of, you know, if you're hanging out with your family this weekend, you'll hear about that white girl that was stabbed by that black guy. I mean, even just saying that in most circles, be like, what? How to what? Why would you say it like that? And well, what? No, he's like bragging about stabbing the white girl. In fact, we should go to that video. I did actually have it in here. I actually brought it in here. I didn't realize earlier. At least I thought I did. Clip 38. And it says to skip to 35 seconds. Maybe skip to about 30 seconds in. The animal who murdered Irina Zarutska clearly stated, I got that white girl. I got that white girl. Let's watch clip number 8. Or 38, rather. This from the beginning. Oh, there it was. Got that white girl. Got that white girl. He's like saying it. Okay. So there he is, dripping blood, knife dripping with her blood. She is breathing her last right now. He takes off his bloody sweatshirt. Yeah, I heard it there. Got that white girl. Got that white girl. So, I mean, is that the way, you know, you just foster this awareness, foster this consciousness? Because I'll tell you, it's not subtle. It's not like something that is racist in any way. That's something people need to understand and like get over. Like, defending white people is not racist. You would defend anybody, wouldn't you? And that's the thing. It's not just white people I'm talking to. Non-white people should defend white people. What the hell is wrong with you? White people defend other races? Like, why would you not? I would defend, I do. I say the Mexicans right now that are being displaced by Americans moving into Mexico City and gentrifying it, yeah, I'm on their side. If they don't want Americans in, they don't need to have them in. They have a right to that. Now we know why they didn't want to release the entire video. DeCarlos Brown can be heard saying, I got that white girl after he murdered innocent Irina Zarutska. Dems and media didn't want Americans to see the racial aspect. Think about that. So I'm opening up the lines for calls, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. What do we do about the crime in America and specifically the racial aspects? Because I'm not Israeli. I'm not looking for like collective punishment against black people. But that's where it's going to go if we don't figure out how to get a handle on this. So what are we going to do? How do we solve this problem before it gets out of control? That's what I want to know. Of course, it's not the only problem. It's just sort of the one that's being talked about most these days. Well, let's go through some other headlines to see everything else collapse around us. U.S. high school students' math and reading scores hit new record low, continuing years-long decline. The 2024 results from the nation's report card reveal that reading and math scores for U.S. high school students, along with science scores for eighth graders, have dropped to historic lows. The results reflect decades-long downward trend worsened by the pandemic, though experts say COVID-19 is not the sole cause of failing scores. In 2024, nearly half of high school seniors fell below the basic achievement level, the largest portion since 2005, while 33% met the standard for college readiness in math, with a decrease from 37% in 2019. The widening achievement graphs and historic lows amount to low-performing students indicate growing inequality and highlight the need for focused action to accelerate learning. Well, yeah, we got to stop grading the students. That's the problem. You know, haven't you learned from Oregon and Seattle and all these left? The solution to discrepancies or inequalities in grading is to stop grading. Okay, just like the way to solve crime is to stop considering things crimes. Don't they know this by now? Meanwhile, most U.S. adults think individual choices keep people in poverty, new AP Nork Harris poll finds. Most U.S. adults believe personal choices are a major driver of poverty, according to a new poll. Approximately 80% of Americans perceive an increase in homelessness in the last 25 years. 54% of Americans think the government spends too little on assistance for those in need. About 40% of U.S. adults believe that federal and state governments have significant responsibilities for addressing poverty and homelessness. But again, I think the important thing is most U.S. adults think individual choices keep people in poverty. Why do they think that? Because it's so easy not to be in poverty in America. So if you're in poverty, it's probably because of the choice that you made, the choices that you continually make. Now, there's kind of a twist to this, which I don't think I have time to explore right now. But I think the number one thing America could do to improve the like status of its poverty stricken and sort of lowest quintile would be just basic economic instruction in school. We don't get any economic instruction in school. So like, and it's funny because the way that you interact with the economy is very different from class to class. I was talking about this with my sister. Where she's like, we were raised middle class and like, that's how we know how to operate. You know how to make a savings account. You know how to like invest your IRA. You know how to make your money, earn a little bit more money to get interest, maybe to start a business. Like you have those capabilities. The upper classes know a whole different range of economic capabilities, right? Because they have access to a lot more funds. So to them, you know, they come out of high school knowing how to, like, you know, start a Fortune 500 company. Stuff that I wouldn't even know how to begin. Then the lower class, like, even the idea of, like, having a bank account, saving up things, like, I don't know. I've found in my personal experience, people from lower classes, like, it's just, they just have a lack of knowledge. They just didn't grow up knowing how to save money, learning how the economy operates. You know, some do, and if you do, then you can get out of poverty. That's the beautiful thing about America. Nobody's stuck in poverty. Nobody is assigned poverty at birth and have to remain there. It's actually the beautiful thing about America that makes America and has made America such a powerful force in this world. It's the reason why we defeated communism. It's the reason why everybody from all over Europe came to America to escape the entrenched classes that kept them in poverty in Europe. They could come to America and actually utilize their skills and become not just well off, but like incredibly rich. They could actually build their fortune, where if they'd stayed in Italy or wherever, they'd be peasants for life. It's actually the beautiful thing about American capitalism and American openness and the classless society of America. But there are still classes, and I think they're mostly defined by financial knowledge and education. And I think that would be a very valuable thing for people to learn in school rather than, I don't know, being taught about the Holocaust or whatever the hell else they teach in middle school these days. Meanwhile, and this is, I don't know how anybody reads the news without feeling insane. But let me correct that. I don't know how anybody reads the news and doesn't realize everybody else is insane. Everybody seems insane, man. I know I'm not insane. I know we're right about pretty much everything. I keep being proven right over and over again. So it's hard for me to feel insane when like if we're just, we keep saying things, then they come to fruition. It's like, well, how can I be crazy? I'm right. I was right about that would all rolled out. So I think I'm the one with the pulse on, the finger on the pulse here. You read headlines like this. New review finds polar geoengineering schemes unproven, risky, and costly. I could have told you that. I don't even have to know about them. You tell me the term polar geoengineering, I'm going to tell you immediately whatever you're talking about is risky, unproven, and costly. And probably not even intended to fix anything, but actually some sort of ulterior motive to enslave humanity. If I had to guess, get a guess. On Tuesday, an international team of 40 researchers published a peer-reviewed study in Frontiers in Science assessing five polar geoengineering proposals. The study responded to growing concerns since COP27 in 2022 about melting ice and political interest in geoengineering, despite many ideas being untested and far-fetched. The proposed methods include injecting reflective particles into the upper atmosphere, installing submerged barriers to block warm water, enhancing ice thickness, extracting water from beneath glaciers, and stimulating marine growth through nutrient addition. However, these approaches are associated with significant expenses, ecological risks, and practical difficulties. And that's just the, polar engineering efforts, not to mention spraying particles in the upper atmosphere to block out the sun, or spraying particles onto clouds to make them brighter, or just rain manipulation of any sort. We don't know the downstream consequences of this. They're all untested. It's impossible to test most of them. And you cannot reverse them. Like, this is the thing I think people need to understand. And this is, like, I want to have a conversation with the Norman. I want to ask them, did the interventions of COVID work? Were they a good thing? Going back in time, would you still be in support of lockdowns and school closures and masks and social distancing? Because unless they're lying, they have to recognize at this point, none of that worked. None of it worked. None of it even started, none of it even helped a little bit. It made everything worse. The unintended consequences are massive, and we're still learning about just how bad they are. E.g., the article I just read about the collapsing math and reading scores. So if they're honest, they have to recognize, yeah, all of those things, they weren't good, and they had negative consequences. They'd have to. So then the question is, what happens if you can't reverse these policies? Once you spray aluminum into the upper atmosphere, you can't get it down again. And there's no planes with big nets scooping up the stuff if it turns out it didn't work well. But it's the exact same sort of mindset that they're going into this. It's an emergency. We don't have time to think. Just do this. Do it now. Do it quick. It's an emergency. You're going to die if you don't. And then they do it. Now with COVID, yeah, the negative consequences are long lasting and we're still experiencing them. And children have been mentally incapacitated in a lot of cases and they'll never recover. I mean, that's all horrible. But eventually they opened up the schools and they were able to reverse that decision. You can't reverse spraying particles in the air. You can't reverse cutting down a forest. So maybe we should be really, really considerate before we implement anything when it comes to climate change, because we've already learned the lesson that despite the experts' demands and assurances, they can be completely wrong and the consequences can be devastating. And in the case of climate change, the consequences will be infinite and forever and permanent. So let's not do anything. And I can probably just stop there, actually. I was going to say, let's not do anything that hasn't been tested fully first, but like, let's just not do any of this crap. Thank you. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. We got more stories. Let's go to your calls now. Let's go to Eris in Wisconsin. We're talking about racist crime. Go ahead, Eris on line 5. Hold on just 1 second. We're putting you on here momentarily. Eris, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think I've called before and spoke with you about how America has been cucked and turned into a beta. And I think this is just an example of it, how, you know, even with a video coming out, even though the problem is so rampant, people are well aware of it. You know, people are just looking the other way, like the old Native American saying, like, you can't wake somebody up who's pretending to be asleep. They're pretending to be asleep.
I've never heard that. That's good. You can't wake somebody up who's pretending to be asleep. That's clever.
Yeah, they're fakers. They're well aware of it. And they actually, you know, like, I think ultimately a lot of, you know, liberals and stuff worship the collapse and destruction and African-American culture instead of their own. They hate Americana. So I think it's a crucial element, because people are kind of thinking like, oh, we can just fix this. But it's a lot bigger of a problem that people are not addressing. Not everybody. You guys are obviously addressing it, you know, and other people online. But also, I wanted to talk about Xi and Putin. We're talking about immortality and living forever. I don't know. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. It came out after my show. And I know Alex covered it, and I think they covered it on the War Room as well. Yeah, I should be covering that more. It was a hot mic. I was talking about it because I was confused on how there was a translation over the hot mic. That was kind of weird. But yeah, Putin and Xi are talking about how they can replace their body parts with, you know, younger organs and live forever, which, of course, I've always said is the ultimate, that is the ultimate conspiracy. And everything else that you see is all in line with that. It's all about how to create a world where people can live forever, where the technology for functional immortality can be held by a few number of people who will wield it as a prize for everybody else. Serve us well enough, and maybe you can be welcomed into the ranks of the immortal. And of course, it just means that the thing compelling the George Soroses and the Peter Thiels, like, and the Xi Jinpings and Vladimir Putins, they're terrified of death, and they are desperate to live forever because they are servants of Satan, and they're fulfilling the promise of the snake in the Garden of Eden. So I should have brought that up more. These days, at 70 years old, you're still a child. Not hot mic catches Putin, Xi discuss organ transplants to achieve more immortality. So creepy. Thanks for the call, Aris. Let's go to Mitch in Cape Cod. I was just mentioning Cape Cod. You've called in before. Thanks for calling in. Mitch, you're on the air. Hold on. Mitch is a, you're a lobster fisherman, right? Or a crab fisherman? So you're on the boat today?
Yeah, I'm out here hauling today, Harrison. You're doing good today. Keep up the good work. I just wanted to call, and you're talking about policing and everything, and I'd like to know what percentage of the listeners even call the cops anymore if there's something wrong, you know? I don't remember the last time they helped me do anything. I feel like I'm solving my own crimes on my own hit and runs around town, and No one's helping you. It's the world we're living in. You got to do it yourself.
Yep, pretty much. That's I don't disagree with you, Mitch. I mean, I'm the same way. Like I said, I got my car broken into, and it didn't even cross my mind I should call the cops. So I know they're not going to do anything. The only reason I would call the cops was to file insurance, because insurance, if you're going to file that you were robbed, you have to file a police report. That's the only reason I would do it. But I didn't even bother doing that. So yeah, I'm the same way. The police aren't helping me. They're not protecting me. I mean, they have no constitutional obligation to protect you, and they aren't going to be there to protect you anyway if you're on a train getting stabbed. I mean, the woman who was stabbed was one car away from two, like, Metro police officers. What are they supposed to do? React in half a second to something that's happening a train car away? I mean, it doesn't matter how close they are if you're not defending yourself and keeping your head on a swivel. We'll be back on the other side to finish this out with more calls and more videos as well. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Right now it's the free $10 ultimate fundraiser sale. Spend $75, get $10 on us. It's a limited time only. Stock up now. Ultramethylene blue, bovine colostrum press, Shilajit complex. Get it all. thealexjonesstore.com.
The last 5 years, I've had all these scientists on promoting spike protein detoxes that have saved so many people and done all this. And finally, we're like, hey, we better do our own. Let's make the best. We take the two best selling ones, combine the two with stuff that the government tried to ban so people would die. And yeah, we're selling stuff that really works. Tell us about Ultimate Life Force. It's a horse pill. I take it a few times a year as a detox. So good for cardiovascular. Just one of the ingredients in this alone is on record a game changer they tried to ban. Right. This is so important.
N-acetylcysteine, better known as NAC, was widely available pre-pandemic, but during the pandemic, during COVID, they took it off Amazon because it was too powerful. Too many people were getting well from it. They say, okay, this isn't a supplement. This is a drug. Now, we're not making that claim. This is a supplement, but it is a supplement that is so powerful it could be used and compared to something like that.
And what is NAC?
N-acetylcysteine is the main precursor to your body's master antioxidant, glutathione, right? Glutathione is what your body uses to detoxify everything. But most importantly, your lungs. NAC reduces lung mucus and is incredibly powerful. This is rocket fuel. This is the gasoline. This is the fuel you need to make the glutathione. But more importantly, even than that almost, I was taking a look at Ultimate Life Force, and I forget about these things. These things are something that they wanted to ban even more. The natokinase and the serrapeptase, those are compounds that go in and break down blood clots and scar tissue and inorganic things in the body. That's for the spike protein. The cool thing is everybody, every human can get healthy. It just takes different specific steps to get healthy. And that's why they're becoming knowledgeable about...
Well, that's like breeds of cows. They're like, these cows can handle the heat. These cows can't. These cows can handle cold. They can't. These dogs can handle this. These can't. We're all dogs. We're all cows. We're all the same species, but there's certain things each group can't handle.
No, 100%. I agree with that. And it's so key. I mean, the reason why Methylene Blue has just been such an incredible hit to the audience and to the supporters, listeners, to us, everyone, is because, well, like, we really feel the effect, you know?
It's like the Garden of Eden. God made all these things to work together.
It's all there. The information's readily
available. No, it's absolutely incredible. These are great products. They fund the operation. And, folks, it's common sense. Go get them. TheAlexShowStore.com. Get the bovine colostrum, get the methyl drive, get the power plant, get the methylene blue, get it all.
What's cool about supplements, at least to me, is you're able to look at these different genetic groups, and then you can go, okay, they need help with this one thing, we got a compound for that.
All we did was go out with the top selling products of all the studies and just combine them together.
100%. And I mean, you look at this product, the NAC alone makes it worth buying, but you've got four or five other things in there directly targeted to addressing COVID and long COVID.
People say, well, I don't have COVID right now. The point is, it's good for you, period.
100%. We've all got scar tissue in us. We've all got issues. We've all got these inorganic compounds, these microplastics. When you look at something like Ultimate Life Force, it might be able to address some of those situations. You look at this, you look at the other products we're offering you, it's kind of hard to do an individual pitch for them because they're all so amazing. It's incredible. We make this stuff for you and for ourselves. Everyone at the InfoWars office is gobbling these supplements left and right. That's why I made these, is so I could take them.
And then you designed it to go with our Ultra Methylene Blue.
Absolutely. That's the key. Before any, like, man or woman, young and old, if you're on Methylene Blue, you got to take it.
Everybody loves the formulas, and I've noticed if I take both together, the energy is totally insane. Each one is very strong on its own.
Methyl Drive is something that every person in the country should take. Well, this is something so powerful they tried to ban it.
So the Methylene Blue is like the engine and gasoline. These products together is the nitrous oxide.
Exactly. It turbocharges.
It's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. We'll go off your phone calls here momentarily. If you want to play a couple more videos.
Now, I'm trying to figure out how to frame this one. Because there's an odd kind of... false dichotomy that's constantly pushed between Judaism and Islam. And it really makes a lot of what we're trying to do, which is promote Americana, it makes it very difficult because people fall for this false dichotomy and they want to impose it on everything. So, and again, it's kind of, it makes me feel a little weird because I approach things just from I try to be as objective as possible and just look at who's right and who's wrong in any given situation. who's the aggressor, who's the victim. And it's, you know, pretty simple for me to break these things down. And I don't understand how other people, you know, justify the discrepancy in their beliefs. In other words, if you believe that the British have a right to not be swamped by Muslim migrants in their own country and are defending their sovereignty, do you also defend the sovereignty of the Palestinians? Because to me, that's the issue, is that you've got a people group who are under attack by an outside group, and they deserve to be protected and to be safe in their homelands. That means I'm on the side of the English people when it comes to England. I'm on the side of the Palestinians when it comes to Palestine-Israel. I don't really understand how you could be against migration into UK, but then be on Israel's side in the Middle East. That doesn't make any sense to me. In that case, to me, you're falling on the dichotomy of I'm on the side of the not Muslims. But that, again, is not very useful when it's not Muslims who are destroying your country. The Muslims didn't let themselves in, after all. So this video, you know, falls into that dichotomy. And so it's weird to me to be in this topic on the same side as people who in reality are my complete enemies and that I want destroyed entirely. So we reject the false dichotomy. Again, I don't understand how this is difficult for people. Think about it like a football team, right? We're the Dallas Cowboys, and we want to, you know, we're our rival is the Washington Redskins, or whatever the hell they're called now, the Washington Cucks. And it's like we want to defeat them, and then, you know, the Redskins play the Chiefs or whatever, and it's like, oh well, so you're on the side of the Chiefs, right? It's like, no, what? No, I'm on the side of the Dallas Cowboys. I'm on the side of America. I'm on the side of Europeans. I'm on the side of Christianity. I don't have to choose between these two other teams. They're not my team. This isn't difficult to me. Let's go to clip number three here, because as we talk about sort of the racial aspects of this, this I think is what poor, naive, ignorant white people in this country need to understand. Nobody else in the whole world thinks about this like you do. Nobody else thinks about race, thinks about nationality. Nobody thinks about it like you do. Even the people who are taking advantage of the way you think about it, they know that they're taking advantage of you. Right? The people that are coming across and lying about being refugees in order to get asylum status, in order to get a job here, even though they were totally safe back home, they know what they're doing. They know that they're taking advantage of your suicidal altruism to benefit from you. So like people in America have this idea that like you're sacrificing something, you're welcoming these people in even when you don't have to, and that they'll be grateful for that and they'll appreciate it and that they'll, you know, want to work to improve your country and to provide something in return for the gift that you've given them. No, they just think you're a sucker. They think you're a sucker. It's not appreciation. It's condemnation. It's these idiots let me in their house. I'm going to rob them. And you're saying they're like, we've done a wonderful thing. We've given a home to somebody who needs it. And they're just like shoving things in a bag like, yeah, thanks. No, that was really nice of you. Clip number three here. They're not shy about their intentions. Let's watch.
American soil, terrorists took the stage and trashed the country hosting them.
The thing to do is to destroy the idea of America in Americans' heads.
It's called the People's Conference for Palestine, which thousands of people attended. And what they were cheering for should terrify you. This isn't a peace conference. It's a gathering of radical activists, terrorist-linked organizations, and people glorifying violence under the banner of liberation. They invited actual terrorists, like Hussein Shaheen, a convicted terrorist who built a cell in Jerusalem and was sentenced to 27 years for attempted murder. He was recently released in a hostage deal and was still invited to come speak. Here's what's actually being said at this conference.
We all know who they are, whether they are in Israel, in Washington, in Europe. They need to be taken out. They need to be neutralized. Now it's time to escalate.
They preach martyrdom.
Salute to our martyrs, those
those who are killed but never die.
They incite hatred towards America.
We live in an evil country. That's just what's happened.
They push rhetoric going against the West socially, ideologically, and politically to cheer for sentences like this.
Liberation, never peace. That's the white man's word, peace. Liberation is our word.
Does that sound like they want peace? They're romanticizing war, and they're turning this into a cult-like experience where people are continuing to be radicalized. And then we see applause erupting when somebody says something like this.
I can tell you, I'm more Palestinian than I am American.
This isn't activism. This is a whole event made to radicalize a group of people under the guise of liberation for the oppressed.
Every sector of society must become a front for confronting Zionism.
And it's funded by organizations directly tied to terrorism. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition was literally led by a Hamas operative. The AMP is under investigation for terror ties. And Code Pink has a long record of working with terrorists and oppressive regimes like Iran. We're living in a world where right and wrong are being blurred on purpose.
We need to retake the universities. We need to neutralize and silence these corporate media.
We're saying peace gets booed, but calling for jihad gets applause. Where blatant hate is being branded as activism and nobody calls it out.
Find that anger within your heart.
Where the people in this conference are using the right of free speech given to them by America to incite violence in America.
We wanted to globalize the Intifada.
This is not liberation. This is dangerous and it needs to be stopped.
Peace. Peace is the white man's word. So true. So true, dude. I have never thought about how true that really is. Peace is the white man's word. Did we come up with that concept? I guess so. Destroy the idea of America in America's heads. But then, of course, again, the false dichotomy is that Palestine bad because of all this. I don't want anything to do with either side here. And to be honest with you, it sounds like the Palestinians are just applying the tactics that the Jews use. So, I mean, you want to talk about an organization that has links to terrorism. You ever heard of the Country of Israel? You ever looked into its founding? The first like five prime ministers were all directly tied to terrorist groups. Lehi and whatever that other one is. To where every aspect of society is a battlefield in this fight. I've heard Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL say exactly the same thing. How about you're both just awful? Both just awful. We want nothing to do with either one. So yeah, we've got these people and Palestine is their rallying cry. But as I've said a million times before, they are right about Palestine for the same reason they're wrong about everything else. And the idea, to me, it's like insulting the idea that you go from Israel and Palestine and Gaza, where there is actual, real, brutal and horrific oppression that's been going on for decades in a very incontrovertible way. And then they're like, and America is exactly the same and America is just as bad. And it's like, well, America's been, you know, complying with Israel and allowing them to do it and giving them the shield they need to do it. So I get that argument. What the hell do we do? Who are we oppressing? We're the oppressed. We're under control of Israel, the same way Gaza and what the West Bank are. We don't want to be a part of this. So reject the false dichotomy, but also understand that our country is full of millions and millions of people who literally think like this and are, you know, geared up for war with America because of America's adherence to Israel. On that note, let's go to clip number 13 here, because Israel just bought CBS, and I'm noticing a pattern. I wonder if you'll recognize it too. Let's go to clip number 13.
You want to know the real reason why Paramount CBS is paying $200 million for Barry Weiss's blog? It's so you don't see segments like this ever again.
We create a pretend world. We are a global production company. We write the screenplay. We're the directors, we're the producers, we're the main actors. The world is our stage.
This is Mossad's old office.
Its motto from Proverbs 24:6 says in so many words, wage war through deception and trickery.
I have no idea how that was ever allowed to air on CBS 60 Minutes, but it was. But no more, because the new owner of CBS's parent company, David Ellison, and his father, Larry, are fully devoted to the state of Israel. In fact, they are Israel's biggest U.S. donor. Quote, Ellison himself has personally bankrolled the Israeli Defense Forces, giving tens of millions of dollars to the Friends of the IDF, an organization that purchases equipment for the Israeli military. And for those of you who don't know or are not that familiar with the Free Press, what they're really good at, what they specialize in, is putting out these pro-Israel pieces with a quote-unquote intellectual lens, like this one that denies that any sort of famine is going on in Gaza. And that's why they want to pay her $200 million to lead CBS News. Glenn Greenwald, the so-called Free Press is engaged in one of the most blatant campaigns of atrocity denials seen in years. That's why the Ellison family, now buying Paramount CBS, wants Barry Weiss there in service of the foreign government they are all desperate to protect and whitewash. The more you know, the more you know.
So I can't help but notice that there's a trend. Oh, by the way, the reason they aired the Mossad piece on CBS was so they want people to think that that's true. This is classic The Art of War. That was not a hit piece on Mossad. That was a Mossad-designed segment where Mossad said, we're going to tell everybody that we're in charge and that we control everything. So they want you to believe that. They want you to believe that everything that's happening is orchestrated by Mossad so that you don't fight back and you don't take any of it seriously. And even when things go against them, they go, actually, we wanted that to happen. Not when you fell into our trap the whole time. That is a psyop that seems obvious to me. When you're weak, appear strong. When you're strong, appear weak. If they were actually strong, they wouldn't put out a piece where they're telling everybody, trust us, we're in charge of everything. We're the script writers. We control the world. Okay. Yeah, right, dude. Good try. But here's the thing that I'm recognizing. An organization in America does something that violates trust or somehow inconveniences or damages Americans or America or American institutions or Donald Trump. Then they're punished. And the way that they're punished is that they are then given to Israel. And this keeps happening. The law firms that helped to try to take down Trump with the Lawfare during his the time without a king that we had. You know, all these farms, all these law firms like Paul Weiss and others who were trying to bring down Trump and, you know, suing him and helping to do research to try to, you know, indict him on stuff. And he got really mad at them. He issued executive orders seeking to punish them. And so they negotiated and they said, okay, we admit we did some bad things. If you promise not to destroy us, we'll give you $40 million of pro bono work gratis. So, you know, we'll do that for you. What we'll do is we'll write the anti-Semitism laws for you. Okay, so a law firm tries to put a former president in prison, completely violates all of the norms of our, you know, political system, engages in lawfare, in complete abject contradiction to the democratic will of the people, and then in return, they write anti-Semitism laws and do work for Israel. Great. Thank you for that. The deportations being focused on Israel. The universities teaching critical race theory and liberation theology and all this crap that has done so much damage to the young people of America and has, you know, completely wrecked our societal fabric. Oh, they finally got punished. How'd they get punished? They're forced to have anti-Semitism monitors. And the non-Zionist presidents of Harvard have been expelled and Zionists have been put in their place. It's like time and time again, you know, China is using TikTok to, you know, destroy the American youth. Better make sure they have an IDF soldier as their Jewish inquisitor now. Oh, CBS dishonestly edited a interview and multiple interviews to try to destroy President Trump's chances and support Kamala Harris. Well, they'll be punished for that. Now you have to be owned by Israel. So things get done to America. And in response, Israel benefits. It just happens over and over, and it's infuriating. So what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? Well, you got all these people attacking us from both sides. You got, you know, Israel and the Ellisons and this Jewish shadow nobility is what it is. I mean, is there any other group of people that passes things on to their children like this? We've just been over the way Soros handed his empire to his son. A little bit nepotistic. Larry Ellison is, of course, you know, the head of AI in this country. Diehard Zionist, working with Trump, $400 million investment. Heads Oracle, he is the main beneficiary of the palace coup that occurred within OpenAI. I mean, he's like kingpin of all of this. And his son, of course, is now going to own CBS because, of course, it's a dynasty. We have this story from today. Murdoch family resolves secession dispute with Lachlan remaining in control of media empire. So the Murdochs, the Ellisons, the Soroses, I mean, it's a family affair, you could say. These people haven't earned anything. They do pass it on to their children. This might be a little overwhelming. Maybe you just want to turn on TV and just relax, just zone out for some mindless entertainment. So you turn on some event, you know, so an award ceremony, music awards. You just want to zone out and just forget all the badness in the world. So you turn on TV, let's see some bright colors and some happy singing. And then clip number three enters your screen. Let's watch.
On American soil, terrorists took the stage and trashed the country hosting
them. Do is to destroy the idea.
We're going to go to clip 23 soon. Oh, what's this? It looks like a vision of hell. Is it supposed to be a vision of hell? Oh, look, it's women in cages. Writhing. Oh, look, it's a blood red stage with horrifying imagery, strobe light, flashing wildly. Yeah, it's a cacophonous, hellish world.
Dance or die.
I mean, are we acting like this is normal? Are we supposed to act like this is something that, it's just American, you know, it's just a little fun concert? No, it's literally a vision of hell, folks. So anyway, you're not escaping through entertainment either, because that's as hellish as anything else. Thanks, Hollywood. We love it. Thanks. Let's go out to your calls now. Savage Dog in Georgia on line 7. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Harrison. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm blessed. Before I do my point, when I was in the Marine Corps, we had a term for picking up trash. It was called policing. And then you had like policing up your brass, right? After
right.
You shoot. It's cleaning up. So Jasmine Crockett was right, but she also, the Honorable Jasmine Crockett also made an argument for, well, the police are useless in the situation, so you better arm up.
Yep.
Just, you know, yeah.
Well, she's a very dumb person. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, exactly. Stupid is what stupid does, Miss Blue. So anyway, my I have a solution for the inner city, you know, like the gang thing.
The black crime, yes.
Well, the inner city, mostly black, yeah. But they don't have a job. What are they going to do? Go to the local store and work for $8 an hour? Okay, so Trump, I've got a lot of things here. First, there's a whole lot to this plan, but I'll make it quick. We're getting short on time. Trump's bringing in all this manufacturing to America. Okay, give them huge tax incentives to put their plants in, like, near big cities. Now they can't get to it. Okay, we'll take the bus line to a point where, you know, they have shuttle buses.
You know, that's a great idea. I get where you're going with it. I do want to go to at least one more call, but I get exactly where you're going with it. I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think there does need to be you know, revamp of the justice system. Clearly, just putting people in prison for 20 years and just letting them abuse each other and then expecting them to be reformed. I mean, it's absurd. It's an absurdity. So I think I'm going to double down on what you're saying. I say we should have like jail. I don't even know if there should be sentences. I think it should be you go to jail until you're reformed. And the way that you're reformed is by showing good behavior in the normal jail. You get to go to another like midway jail where you get a job, maybe you work in a factory, maybe you run a little store on the side and you prove that you can be integrated back into society for a certain amount of time and then you're let out. I think there needs to be a total rethinking of the justice system. It's just when I say that, what I'm not saying is we should defund the police and let the criminals out of prison. That's what most people mean when they say justice reform. So I think we do need justice reform to actually get these people back to a place where they can be in society, not just shove them in a concrete box for the time being. Although that's a good start and we should do that rather than nothing. Thanks for the call, Savage Dog. Let's go to Alan in California, connecting the dots for us. Go ahead, Alan. You're on the air.
Harrison, younger brother from a different mother. God bless you. You're doing great.
Thank you, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to say VIP member, subscriber, and I bought the Battle Dagger on your recommendation. Got it. Love it.
Excellent. Thank you.
So here's the connection of the dots. So we know that in 2016, they couldn't keep Trump from us. So they, you know, let him get elected to a degree because they couldn't not do it. But with every one of the administrations, they have an overriding purpose. So with the Trump administration, he got in, did what he did. They brought in COVID to sabotage him. Yeah. Okay. So they could push him out. Can we agree on that with the 2020? They pushed Joe Biden in so that they could bring in the onslaught. And by the way, from even you all had a minute and a half on Van Dot video of somebody that said, I think it was one of the governors or, but anyways, person said 40 to 50 million people are in this country right now illegally. Okay. Plus, you remember the news report, we have 55 million people in this country on visas.
Yeah.
Right?
So taking the census data, that's like a third of the country is not American at this point, at least.
Exactly. So we either have 450 million people here of 350 million that are Americans, quote unquote, and then there's 105 million others, or we only have 350 million people here and there's only 250 million. But I digress. So here's the thing. They have a plan for, because the Biden administration plan, the powers that be brokers, I don't even call them elites because they're scum. They had that, they brought in Biden, so bringing these people. This time, Trump got elected because they couldn't stop it. They are planning a financial crash / civil war, okay? Yeah. It was a godsend that you played those two videos while I was on hold. The Palestinian conference, okay? They're gearing up for a big clash of cultures inside the 48 continental United States. And tying the bow here, Pam Bondi, along with Christy Wiles, both big Zionists, okay? Pam Bondi was in Florida as the AG, and she's the one that pushed for George Zimmerman to get prosecuted.
I did not know that. You're going to have to call back in. I'd like to talk to you more, Alan. Call in tomorrow, if you will. That's going to be it for us, folks. Alex Jones, 90 seconds.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, The West Awakens, with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen. Get them now at theyellowstonestore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store, apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense, me and Biz, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got war bonds. That's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100. It's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, it's not being Amazon Prime. You get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time. Get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our monthly blue. You are crazy if you don't get our Ultimate Life Force Blood Detox. It's all there at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.